The United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned.
Oh, 781-9600 or toll free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at TracyandFriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. Hope you're having a good day today. And I just want to say thank you to all of my guests on yesterday, and thanks to Dr. Matt Mason and all those that of you that are loyal listeners to us here on WSOM AM 600. We do our best to give you good programming and to make it interesting for you. As you know, today is Open Mic Friday, and the number is 347-945-5229. And I found something very, very interesting that I'm going to play. Jeff is out picking up his daughter, and I am home alone. And y'all know I hate to be home alone. It's a bad thing. And so, because I, you know, as much as I talk, I am only opinionated on other people's opinions. And so I like to have the dialogue. It's just who I am. But I did find something very, very interesting, and I'm going to play it in a few minutes. But before I do that, since I have a little time and I won't be disrupted by anyone else, I'm going to stop and thank for a minute the sponsors and people that make this happen every day. I don't think you guys realize that we are independently owned and independently operated, though we broker through Cumulus Radio, and it's a wonderful family to be a part of. But I want to thank Ambassador Technologies and Charlie Staples Barbecue over on Rand Avenue, and Dr. Hill, Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley. They have been with me since the beginning, and I don't think you understand that that means the highs, the lows, the ups, the downs. They have stuck and they've stayed. Boardman Frame House Gallery, Henry Nemmons, First Choice Joining Coin and Jewelry, Kingley Auto. Also want to thank Turning Point Counseling, Blue Wolf Tavern, and many, many others that I'm probably going to be a little bit remiss then forget their names, but I also want to give a shout out to them because these are some of the companies that really, really make it happen. Then I also want to say Barbie Doll over at Antiques and All. Go out and see her today. You know, this is going to be a great garage sale weekend. It's going to be a great time to go out and just junk it. And if you're like me in any way, I am addicted to going out to garage sales and secondhand stores. And I just love them. So since I do that, and I'm friends with Barbie, I've known her for a very, very long time. And Dolph Antiques and All is located over on South Avenue, on the corner of South Avenue and West Reserve, located here in the Youngstown area. Stop out and say hi. Tell me you heard it on Tracy and Friends. And also the Curiosity Shop, great consignment store down on 224 behind the McDonald's in Canfield. For you ladies that like to shop on a budget, they're gently used consignment clothes, and I do very, very well. So when you see me out, I may look like I've walked off of Fifth Avenue in New York, but truly I've walked out of somebody's great consignment shop. And so I wanted to get that out. There's a guy by the name of Ken Robinson, and Sir Ken Robinson outlines three principles crucial for the human mind to flourish and how current education culture works against them. Education is the key, and if you heard me say this before, Dr. Condoleezza Rice has put it well. The new civil rights is education, and we have allowed people to dumb us down politically as well as socially as well as academically. And it's not about the formal education that you get, but it's about the knowledge that you have. And what we're doing is we are not paying attention to the game that is being played on us when it comes to our own advancement. So I'm going to play this. It's about 17 minutes, so I'll go from here until the bottom of the hour, and then we'll open up the lines for open mic. Do want to talk with you today. I want to hear what you have to say. Write this number down. The number is 347-945-5229. If you want to call me locally, you can. The number is 330 781-9600. Do want to hear from you today. But I'm going to start this now, and I think you'll enjoy it, especially those that are sitting in your car having lunch. I think you'll find it very, very interesting. We'll be back in about 30 minutes. Okay, see, that's what I'm saying. I get things queued up. I think I'm doing good, and all of a sudden things don't work the way I want them to.
I moved to America 12 years ago with my wife, Terry, and our two kids. Actually, truthfully, we moved to Los Angeles. Thinking we were moving to America. But anyway, it's a short plane ride from Los Angeles to America. I got here 12 years ago, and when I got here, I was told various things, like, Americans don't get irony. Have you come across this idea? It's not true. I've traveled a whole length and breadth of this country. I have found no evidence that Americans don't get irony. It's one of those cultural myths, like the British are reserved. I don't know why people think this. We've invaded every country we've encountered. It's not true Americans don't get irony, but I just want you to know that that's what people are saying about you behind your back. You know, as you, when you leave living rooms in Europe, people say, thankfully, nobody was ironic in your presence. But I knew that Americans get irony when I came across that legislation, No Child Left Behind. Because whoever thought of that title gets irony. Don't they? Because... because it's leaving millions of children behind. Now, I can see that's not a very attractive name for legislation. Millions of children left behind. I can see that. What's the plan? Well, we propose to leave millions of children behind, and here's how it's going to work. And it's working beautifully. In some parts of the country, 60% of kids drop out of high school. In the Native American communities, it's 80% of kids. If we halved that number, one estimate is it would create a net gain to the U.S. economy over 10 years of nearly $1 trillion. From an economic point of view, this is good math, isn't it, that we should do this? It actually costs an enormous amount to mop up the damage from the dropout crisis. But the dropout crisis is just the tip of an iceberg. What it doesn't count are all the kids who are in school but being disengaged from it, who don't enjoy it, who don't get any real benefit from it. And the reason is not that we're not spending enough money. America spends more money on education than most other countries. Class sizes are smaller than in many countries. And there are hundreds of initiatives every year to try and improve education. The trouble is, it's all going in the wrong direction. There are three principles on which human life flourishes, and they are contradicted by the culture of education under which most teachers have to labor and most students have to endure. The first is this, that human beings are naturally different and diverse. Can I ask you, how many of you have got children of your own? Okay, or grandchildren? How about two children or more? Right. And the rest of you have seen such children, small children. Small people wandering about. I will make you a bet, and I'm confident I will win the bet. If you've got two children or more, I bet you they are completely different from each other, aren't they? Aren't they? You would never confuse them, would you? Like, which one are you? Remind me. You know, your mother and I are going to introduce some color coding system so we don't get confused. Education under No Child Left Behind is based on not diversity, but conformity. What schools are encouraged to do is find out what kids can do across a very narrow spectrum of achievement. one of the effects of No Child Left Behind has been to narrow the focus onto the so-called STEM disciplines. They're very important. I'm not here to argue against science and math. On the contrary, they're necessary, but they're not sufficient. A real education has to give equal weight to the arts, the humanities, to physical education. An awful lot of kids... Sorry, thank you. One estimate in America currently is that something like 10% of kids getting on that way are being diagnosed with various conditions under the broad title of attention deficit disorder, ADHD. I'm not saying there's no such thing. I just don't believe it's an epidemic like this. If you sit kids down hour after hour doing low-grade clerical work, don't be surprised if they start to fidget, you know. Children are not, for the most part, suffering from a psychological condition. They're suffering from childhood, you know, and I know this because I spent my early life as a child. I went through the whole thing. And kids prosper best with a broad curriculum that celebrates their various talents, not just a small range of them. And by the way, the arts aren't just important because they improve math scores. They're important because they speak to parts of children's being which are otherwise untouched. The second... Sorry, thank you. The second principle that drives human life and flourishing is curiosity. If you can light the spark of curiosity in a child, they will learn without any further assistance very often. Children are natural learners. It's a real achievement to put that particular ability out or to stifle it. Curiosity is the kind of engine of achievement. Now, the reason I say this is because one of the effects of the current culture here, if I can say so, has been to deprofessionalize teachers. There is no system in the world or any school in the country that's better than its teachers. Teachers are the lifeblood of the success of schools. But teaching is a creative profession. Teaching properly conceived is not a delivery system. You know, you're not there just to pass on received information. Great teachers do that. But what great teachers also do is mentor, stimulate, provoke, engage. You see, in the end, education is about learning. If there's no learning going on, there's no education going on. And people can spend an awful lot of time discussing education without ever discussing learning. The whole point of education is to get people to learn. A friend of mine, an old friend, actually very old, he's dead. that's as old as he gets, I'm afraid. So, but a wonderful guy, he was, a wonderful philosopher. He used to talk about the difference between the task and achievement senses of verbs. You know, you can be engaged in the activity of something, but not really be achieving it. It's like dieting. It's a very good example, you know. There he is, he's dieting. Is he losing any weight? Not really. Teaching is a word like that. You can say, there's Deborah, she's in room 34, she's teaching. But if nobody's learning anything, she may be engaged in the task of teaching, but not actually fulfilling it. The role of a teacher is to facilitate learning. That's it. And part of the problem is, I think, that the culture of the dominant culture of education has come to focus on not teaching and learning, but testing. Now, testing is important. Standardized tests have a place. But they should not be the dominant culture of education. They should be diagnostic. They should help. If I go for a medical examination, I want some standardized tests. I do. You know, I want to know what my cholesterol level is compared to everybody else's on a standard scale. I don't want to be told on some scale my doctor invented in the car. You know, your cholesterol is what I call level orange. Really? Is that good? We don't know. But all that should support learning. It shouldn't obstruct it, which, of course, it often does. So in place of curiosity, what we have is a culture of compliance. our children and teachers are encouraged to follow kind of routine algorithms rather than to excite that power of imagination and curiosity. And the third principle is this, that human life is inherently creative. It's why we all have different resumes. We create our lives, and we can recreate them as we go through them. It's the common currency of being a human being. It's why human culture is so interesting and diverse and dynamic. I mean, other animals may well have imaginations and creativity, but it's not so much in evidence, is it, as ours. I mean, you may have a dog, you know, and your dog may get depressed. You know, but it doesn't listen to Radiohead, does it? And, you know, sits staring out the window with a bottle of Jack Daniels. And you say, would you like to come for a walk? He says, no, I'm fine. You go. I'll go. But take pictures. We all create our own lives through this restless process of imagining alternatives and possibilities. And one of the roles of education is to awaken and develop these powers of creativity. Instead, what we have is a culture of standardization. Now, it doesn't have to be that way. It really doesn't. Finland regularly comes out top in math, science, and reading. Now, we only know that's what they do well at because that's all that's being tested currently. That's one of the problems of the test. They don't look for other things that matter just as much. The thing about work in Finland is this. They don't obsess about those disciplines. They have a very broad approach to education, which includes humanities, physical education, the arts. Second, there is no standardized testing in Finland. I mean, there's a bit. But it's not what gets people up in the morning. It's not what keeps them at their desks. And the third thing, I was at a meeting recently with some people from Finland, actual Finnish people, and so somebody from the American system was saying to the people in Finland, what do you do about the dropout rate in Finland? And they all looked a bit bemused and said, well, we don't have one. Why would you drop out? If people are in trouble, we get them quite quickly and help them and we support them. Now, people always say, well, you know, you can't compare Finland to America. No, I think there's a population of around 5 million in Finland. But you can compare it to a state in America. Many states in America have fewer people in them than that. I mean, I've been to some states in America, and I was the only person there. Really. Really, I was asked to lock up when I left. And but what all the high-performing systems in the world do is currently what is not evident, sadly, across the systems in America. I mean, as a whole. One is this. They individualize teaching and learning. They recognize that it's students who are learning, and the system has to engage them, their curiosity, their individuality, and their creativity. That's how you get them to learn. The second is that they attribute a very high status to the teaching profession. They recognize that you can't improve education if you don't pick great people to teach and if you don't keep giving them constant support and professional development. Investing in professional development is not a cost, it's an investment. And every other country that's succeeding well knows that, whether it's Australia, Canada, South Korea, Singapore, Hong Kong, or Shanghai. They know that to be the case. And the third is they devolve responsibility to the school level for getting the job done. You see, there's a big difference here between going into a mode of command and control in education. That's what happens in some systems. You know, central governments decide or state governments decide, they know best and they're going to tell you what to do. The trouble is that education doesn't go on in the committee rooms of our legislative buildings. It happens in classrooms and schools. And the people who do it are the teachers and the students. And if you remove their discretion, it stops working. You have to put it back to the people. There's wonderful work happening in this country. But I have to say, it's happening in spite of the dominant culture of education, not because of it. It's like people are sailing into a headwind all the time. And the reason I think is this, that many of the current policies are based on mechanistic conceptions. of education. It's like education is an industrial process that can be improved just by having better data. And somewhere in, I think, the back of the mind of some policymakers is this idea that if we fine-tune it well enough, if we just get it right, it'll all hum along perfectly into the future. It won't, and it never did.
Hi, this is Tracy. We are live.
The point is that education is not a mechanical system. It's a human system. It's about people. People who either do want to learn or don't want to learn. Every student who drops out of school has a reason for it, which is rooted in their own biography. They may find it boring. They may find it irrelevant. They may find that it's at odds with the life they're living outside of school. There are trends, but the stories are always unique. I was at a meeting recently in Los Angeles of, they're called alternative education programs. These are programs designed to get kids back into education. They have certain common features. They're very personalized. They have strong support for the teachers, close links with the community, and a broad and diverse curriculum, and often programs which involve students outside school as well as inside school. And they work. What's interesting to me is these are called alternative education. You know? And all the evidence from around the world is if we all did that, there'd be no need for the alternative. So I think we have to embrace a different metaphor. We have to recognize that it's a human system and there are conditions under which people thrive and conditions under which they don't. We are, after all, organic creatures. And the culture of school is absolutely essential. Culture is an organic term, isn't it? Not far from where I live is a place called Death Valley. Death Valley is the hottest, driest place in America, and nothing grows there. Nothing grows there because it doesn't rain, hence Death Valley. In the winter of 2004, it rained in Death Valley. 7 inches of rain fell over a very short period. And in the spring of 2005, there was a phenomenon. The whole floor of Death Valley was carpeted in flowers for a while. What it proved is this, that Death Valley isn't dead. It's dormant. Right beneath the surface are these seeds of possibility, waiting for the right conditions to come about. And with organic systems, if the conditions are right, life is inevitable. It happens all the time. You take an area, a school, a district, you change the conditions, give people a different sense of possibility, a different set of expectations, a broader range of opportunities. You cherish and value the relationships between teachers and learners. You offer people the discretion to be creative and to innovate in what they do. And schools that were once bereft spring to life. Great leaders know that. The real role of leadership in education, and I think it's true at the national level, the state level, at the school level, is not and should not be command and control. The real role of leadership is climate control, creating a climate of possibility. And if you do that, people will rise to it and achieve things that you completely did not anticipate and couldn't have expected. There's a wonderful quote from Benjamin Franklin. There are three sorts of people in the world. Those who are immovable, people who don't get it, they don't want to get it, they're not going to do anything about it. There are people who are movable, people who see the need for change and are prepared to listen to it. And there are people who move, people who make things happen. And if we can encourage more people, that will be a movement. And if the movement is strong enough, that's, in the best sense of the word, a revolution. And that's what we need.
Do you depend on your computer? Then you know that a virus on your computer is bad news. But there is something you can do. Just call this number, 330-759-9700. That's 330-759-9700. That's the number for Ambassador Technologies in Liberty Township. Ambassador Technologies specializes in virus removal and restores your computer to full performance. We also specialize in computer repair, from desktops, laptops, laptop screens, laptop power supplies, laptop batteries, and hardware updates. And when your business needs networking, Ambassador Technologies is the place to go. Ambassador Technologies, Youngstown's best for computer repair, networking, website development, and even low-cost business cards and publishing. Call Ambassador Technologies at 330-759-9700. Online at ambastech.com. That's ambassetech.com.
Howdy, howdy. I'm so excited. Charlie Stable Barbecue Sauce is at the grocery store. That's right. You can get Charlie Stable Barbecue Sauce right at the store. That means you can put back the thick and muddy. If you can't taste the meat, what's the point? Pick up the smooth and delicate Charlie Stable Barbecue Sauce. Next time you find yourself down at the market, remember, Charlie Stable Barbecue Sauce. The pool couple of.
Charlie Staples Barbecue Sauce is now available at the grocery stores. Ask your grocer for a couple of.
If you can't taste the meat, then what's the point?
We're back with Tracy and Friends on News Talk 600 WSOM, 347-945-5229, or toll-free 1-800-530-WSOM, online at tracyandfriends.com, or 600WSOM.com. Now, here's Tracy.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends, and the number here is 347-945-5229. Again, that number is 347-945-5229, and I hope you enjoyed Mr. Ken Robinson. And he is British in his origin, but I found his conversation to be very, very intriguing. Very, you know, I agreed with it. And, you know, as I look at education, as I look at as being the equalizer of America, I wanted people to think about that because I am all for testing, but I do believe that it is supposed to be a catapult for teaching you what you're doing and not doing, not one to level the experience of our children. Hey, Alabama, your mic is on. The show is yours, Alex.
Yeah, you know what I found interesting about that? Was that a TED lecture?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it sounded, I could tell a TED lecture. It sounded like one. But anyway, I noticed, I'm trying to look to get back into real estate, and up here in Atlanta, I was over in the Decatur area, which was the hood, back when I stayed here in 95 and 97. But I've noticed now the houses over there they got houses going for $800,000, I mean, which in the South, that's a lot of money. And the only thing that I'm noticing is that the education system is one of the best. In the city of Decatur. So people, that affects the property value, which in turn affects wealth in a sense, because if it's a high value education system, then people tend to want to live in that department, I mean, in that area, because the property value is going to go up, you know, of course, and they did raise the property taxes and they're moving a lot of people out, poor people, but that's another story. But I mean, that's just something that, you know, it affects a lot more than we are aware of, I think.
You know, what we fail to realize is, you know, as he talked about climate, and, you know, when you look at your urban settings, you don't see a climate that induces and or cultivates education of any type. And when I say education, I'm not always talking about four-year degrees. I'm talking about knowledge. When we look at what happens to people and we kill the spark of curiosity and we dumb them down, we don't talk to our kids and we don't give them the opportunity for advancement because we don't give them opportunity for education, nor do we create a climate that that motivates education and motivates learning stuff and doing stuff and becoming innovative. It affects the whole community. If you go into your urban or your suburban areas, you see a little bit more of an embrace of education. But it's, again, it goes to what he said about environment and the culture. The question is, how do we bring an environment or a culture of higher learning and education into poor and underserved areas in America? Because that has to happen. Because if you're not doing it in the home, you can't do it outside the home. And that's why you see the difference between, you know, an $80,000 house and an $800,000 house. Wouldn't you say?
I mean, yeah, I think that I would venture to say that necessity, I think sometimes it's just like, you know, in The Color Purple, what was it, Miss Sophia, Oprah's character. She was just saying that she had it beat out of her, like the life wanting to do something, and she said she would have it beat out of her when she was in prison for, you know, a little situation with the guy calling or whatever, child or whatever. But that's just, that was just something that I noticed when you were talking. I was thinking about that, and that a lot of people, if you talk to them from the hood and people that are in these low-income urban areas, they'll tell you they see a lack of hope, which, of course, that's going to kill curiosity because they don't see, like, okay, I could try this or I could try that, but it probably won't work, you know. And, you know, now you're getting into politics, but that's just how people think. It's the same thing. Yeah, they just don't think it works. They just think off the top, this won't work. I was told a lot of things I've done won't work. Sometimes they were right. Sometimes they were wrong. But, that's just the bottom line. I feel like a lot of people are, you know, have that mentality that they don't want to try. And that's inbred because in our education system, it tells you, hey, if you try something and you're wrong, you fail. You fail the test. Whereas learning is all about cheating off other people's paper. You know, in life, you learn, quote unquote, what we call cheating in school, which is piggybacking, learning off people's knowledge next to you, which is kind of like mentorship or what they call in benchmarking, but they call that copycatting or whatever. And that's what in school is kind of counterproductive, so to speak. And I work with a lot of people that are A-type personalities that are good at, figuring stuff out, real smart. But, you know, I think it does cost. There's a trade-off if you don't learn how to deal with people and working groups and in a community environment. It's a lot of stuff when it comes to education. I mean, education can fix a lot of stuff. It can.
Correct. And look at the apathy of our environment. Because we will acknowledge that we pay anywhere from $30,000 to $80,000 a year to house an inmate. And those are supposed to be places of rehabilitation.
Well, that's about wealth for those actual counties and stuff. Those people get counted on the census for resources. That's another. You know, those people actually working in private organizations for pennies an hour. My friend's brother went, and they got him working. He's working in a company, and they're making money off of his labor, and he's getting like a few pennies an hour for working.
That's slavery. Alabama, it is. It's the modern day slave. So my question is, when will the people who are free stand up and say no more? Because if you do not educate me inside of the school district, and you do not educate me inside of the home, you cannot and will not educate me inside of the penal system, which means you will make me a permanent underclass.
Don't you think that, and this is part of, I'm kind of torn about this, and I'm going to tell you why. I feel you, but there's still a part of me that says, when is a person going to have to take, look, a lot of people come from the same environment, and they don't succumb to it. And you succumb to it. You have to take personal responsibility. If you drop out of school, that's your fault.
No, but listen to me. But we breed an environment where dropping out of school is acceptable. See, remember, we're talking about atmosphere and climate. I promise you, if you are around people for long enough and they're knowledgeable enough, you will raise your level of knowledge so that you can actually even know what they're talking about, even if you don't participate. We do not breed and or create a climate where education is coveted. We covet money. We covet stuff. Think about this, guys. The number is 347-945-5229. Alex, your mic is on, and so is yours, 269. Think about this. We have bred an environment where people will go out and buy a purse that costs $500. They will buy knockoff purses that look like they have $500 purses, but won't have $500 that they can get access to within a day. And we know all the names of all the Louis, Gucci's, Versace's, Chanel's, Fendi's, and all that.
But if you asked us to go and figure out how to get a loan, we couldn't do it. It is the environment and the culture and the climate that we have contributed to. Go ahead, 267, your mic is on.
Well, that's definitely true that it's the culture that African Americans are in that does not contribute to their education. If you compare it to the cultures a lot of the Southeast Asians come from, they put education more on a pedestal, and their options are not seen in sports and entertainment. They see their options in engineering and in business and in different types of science, healthcare, whatever. So they have a different outlook.
I need for you to do me a favor, because, see, this is the issue. I know that we look at African Americans and we think it is all us.
Yeah.
But what I need for us to understand that it's not all black. They are creating a class of underserved that does not have a race attached to it. And we need to open up our eyes and come to the realization that it's truly not about the color of our skin.
Yeah, but also,
not in 2013.
Also, there was a recent, I saw something recently, and it came from the Heritage Foundation, and they evidently had one of their in-resident scholars give a presentation in which he tried to allude to the fact that he didn't believe that recent immigrants who were Hispanic would gain any sort of parity in terms of their IQs with people who are white Americans currently in the country. So there is still this movement to scapegoat different types of racial minorities to believe that they will never gain any sort of parity with people who are in the majority population in the country.
But let me say this.
Arguments are still being made. So therefore,
but what I'm saying to you is the Heritage Foundation, as well as many, many other foundations, as many, many other study groups, they continue to put out resources, documents to keep us polarized from one another. And so the same game. Let me finish.
This is part of a larger movement.
But the larger movement is more than just going after one segment of people of color in a population. They are going after the underserved and anyone that they can put inside of that box.
Poor white Americans are not seen in the same context as these racial minorities who they believe will never be able to assimilate.
But you're missing what I'm saying. Philadelphia. But you're missing what I'm saying. They are making us believe that it's all one. Because what they don't want is they don't want the underserved to act. Let me finish. They do not want the underserved to realize that it's not about the color of your skin. They try to demonize you based upon your ethnicity or your ethnic group, when in actuality, they're polarizing everybody so that nobody goes and pays attention to what's going on with them. You've got to understand that.
But the arguments that are being made among the academics is that these racial minorities, namely Hispanic, Black, and some other, and these groups will never be able to
Because they want you to believe it.
Society. Poor whites who are in America are seen as being people who are not from.
It's because that's what they want you to believe.
But eventually, over time, if they apply themselves, they'll have a better chance of being able to adapt
into
America.
He can't comment on
these other minority groups.
He can't go past what he's saying. And what we're trying to tell you is we understand what the academics are saying. We're telling you what the researchers are saying. We understand what they're telling us. What I'm telling you, what is true. See, there's an academic study, and then there is an actuality study that says if I keep them polarized and make them think it's one against the other, they won't come together to realize that we're hoodwinking both of them so that we can take over all of them. You got to realize they're trying to take over all of them, not just one sect of the population. President Obama did not get elected by one sect of the population.
No, I didn't say he got elected by
listen
one.
Listen to what I'm saying. You're not listening. He's
part
not,
of the population. I'm saying that these arguments
to,
are still being made, actively
they're
being
making
made.
Them to keep you hoodwinked to think that it's them and not us. Go ahead, South Carolina.
Philadelphia, you gotta listen, man. Here, you got.
I am listening,
folks.
Sir. But what I can easily do is I don't have access to a computer right now, but
I,
you can go. But what you can do is you can go on the internet and you can look up
Heritage
Foundation.
I'm not trying to go on the internet. I'm looking at what's actually there, man.
And like IQ,
man, you're not listening, dude. Dude, you're not listening. Because listen, when you
look
at listen to what I'm saying. If you put poor white people in the same box as poor black people, you're going to come out with the same poor people.
Exactly. That's the whole point.
But the whole perception is that these minorities of color will never gain
is
parity for.
The perception is not reality.
The common denominator in the whole thing is poor is poor, okay? Black, white, purple, orange, green,
but
white yellow.
but white poor is
no,
not
white
the same as
the
Hispanic
same
or black.
It
dude,
is.
Poor is
Appalachia
poor. Is not the same.
It,
it
listen,
is not
listen,
the same.
dude. Listen, poor whites in Appalachia.
If you
do you realize we have places here in where I live. If you go further down the Ohio River, it's called Appalachia.
Yeah.
And Appalachia is so poor. They don't even run water lines. They don't run
but
gas lines.
A lot of
lines.
That is by choice. A lot of that is by choice. Those people
what do you mean by choice?
Live that way.
No, sweetheart. Appalachia does not choose to live in
oh,
a
well, place. But what I'm saying to you
you're
is
not listening.
The way the majority.
They don't want you to know that they don't care about poor whites and they don't care about poor blacks.
Many of the, well, but look, the way the majority views it is that if you are a person who is designated as white in America, you are an active part of the American system. They still view these minority groups of color as being outside the system and as not being able to
where did you
gain
get that
any
at?
Kind of parity.
Who told you that?
If that be the case, Philadelphia, if that be the case, then Barack Obama would never have been voted as president of the United States.
Well, but Barack Obama was elected. Well, first of all, you have to question the whole process, like in terms of national type elections, because I don't believe the popular vote is actually the determining factor that's
is
causing these presidents
factor.
To
it's
go
not.
Into office. So, but the reason why Barack Obama is in place right now is so that the government can go through a transition, like in terms of his economic system. We are going through an economic transition, and Obama is in place to move that transition forward. We have
and
to
Hillary,
go,
Philadelphia. Philadelphia, that's the most asinine thing I've heard all day long. You mean to tell me Hillary Clinton couldn't have done the same thing?
Well, there were factors that caused
No. You mean to tell me Hillary Clinton no. You mean to tell me that Hillary Clinton could not have done the same thing?
There were factors that were in
what
place
factors?
At the time that caused
what factors made it to where she could he could, she couldn't, and you're trying to tell me that they're trying to play the game on only people
of
color?
I think there were aspects of her personality which caused people in the elite to not feel a sense of comfort with her in that office. And that's the reason why she was not selected to be there.
Wait a minute. Let me get this straight. They're going to turn their backs on a white woman, a white minority, a white woman. She's in a minority because she's a woman. She's a lawyer. She was a first lady of the United States versus a black man that comes from, well, we don't know for sure.
First of all, Obama was more of an ideal choice in terms of foreign policy. Because
No, I'm going back to my original conversation because it goes back to education and it goes
and Muslim countries.
It goes. Listen, dude.
And
listen, I'm going back to my original conversation.
The governments of a lot of Muslim countries in the world. So
I'm going back to my original conversation because I was going back to education because I think it's important. And unless we start creating a climate and an environment for people to learn, and this is not about the color of your skin, it's about the aptitude and the altitude that you want to actually achieve, we will be stuck somewhere that we don't want to be. And that's going to be a working underclass that may or may not be. Anytime you've got people with degrees working inside of call centers, we have a problem in America.
But it depends on what they have degrees in. You know, you have to go into a growth field today. If you enter any type of higher education, you have to do your homework in terms of if you believe there'll be a job on the end of that.
He just made a point. He made a couple of points, actually. But that first point, the point he just made a second ago about depending on what degree you have. I have a degree in business and information systems. I couldn't get a job, and the demand is out of astronomical right now for IT jobs. But you have to have experience. How do you get experience? Well, that was a circular argument. I had to go. I went to Best Buy trying to get into the Geek Squad. I couldn't get in there. I had to actually go do some free work for my brother's company for about 2-3 years, doing little SQL statements and stuff just to get my feet wet, just to even be able to get a job. And so it's not easy. In certain positions like nursing, yeah, you can get a job pretty easy. But you know, our school teacher in certain school systems,
you didn't let me finish.
Here's the problem I'm looking at, Tracy, and this is one thing that I told my daughters. You went to school, you get your degree. If you get your degree, say for instance in basket weaving, then you're gonna have to move to where the basket weavers are going to be hired. And that's the thing that a lot of people don't want to hear. Sometimes you're going to have to relocate to that place where they are hiring instead of staying where you're at. That takes you out of your comfort zone, puts you in a totally new environment. That may be what happens.
South Carolina, let me say it this way. The people that I know that are looking for work, that have degrees, they have degrees in marketing, they have degrees in automation. They have degrees. They have some IT degrees. The work environment, because of the slowing in actual hiring, no matter what the jobs report says, they're maybe adding 100,000 jobs to a billion people or a billion people per week. But the jobs that are out there and the experience, the entry level jobs that you could once get, they are no longer filling those jobs with people. We need to understand that. And they are not giving opportunity to small business so that you can bring them in at entry level and give them the experience that they need for growth. And so a lot of people are coming out of schools and they're trying to become a part of the system, but the system is shutting them out no matter what their degree is in, unless it is in healthcare, because it's not expanding enough to give you opportunity to go into it.
And you also have to realize
that student loan comes due 6 months after you walk across that stage.
Would you come out better not even going to college and just taking an apprenticeship like they used to do with someone that actually does what it is that you want to do, for example, IT? I would have rather went sat in some little quick class, about 6 months, jumped out and started working somewhere free as an apprentice for someone. And instead of going to school, of course, I was playing ball, so that's really why I went. But at the time, that's the way I was thinking. But at the same time, you're not going to get out there and get a job if you got a degree but you don't have any experience. You could be a 4.0 student. There are a few people that, like Oracle, that'll take you in like that. But for the most part, it's not like the dot-com bubble. Back in the day, people were getting out of college, getting $80,000 fresh out of college, no experience. Well, after that happened, now they want people that are savvy. No, I'm competing. When I first got my first, I was competing with a guy with 25 years experience. I mean, those are the type of – that's just in IT. So I can imagine in other things. And if you're going to get a degree in psychology, then, hey, you're going to be working at McDonald's.
So what I'm saying is, listen to what I'm saying. When I talk about academia and I talk about education, it's not always going to college. But what I'm looking at is We need to start bonding ourselves together, putting our resources together, and creating our own, and having the aptitude and the knowledge base and the willingness to work together to make things happen. Because what's happening today is, now Philadelphia, I will bring in the race card. Because of the networks that white America has access to, it gives a seamless transition into the workforce easier than people of color because they don't have the doors open because we're not there.
Yes. Also, culture goes into that, too, because if a guy comes in and he's closer to your culture, he makes you feel more comfortable. I've experienced that. I've came into environments, and I answered all the questions, aced the interview, didn't get the job. And some kid, I had a kid asking me interviews. He didn't even have a degree. But he was asking me interviews. He's like 22 years old coming in, but I don't laugh at their jokes because I'm from a different segment of society. We have a different culture, and they said, well, he wasn't a culture fit.
Let me say this, and culture does make a difference because if you cannot adapt to the culture in the environment in which I have established in my workplace, you will wreck my whole company, and I can't afford to let you do that.
And also what's happening is those suburban networks are becoming more and more kind of hidden from the people who are in the minority groups. And the major universities are not selecting people like on a meritocracy type basis.
Hold on. You just made a point. You just said that the person would come in and wreck the company because he doesn't think it's okay to sit there and shoot Nerf guns on Friday and hit people in the head.
Listen, that's the type of environment. They do cheesy stuff like that. Yes, sweetheart.
I don't think it's
cute. Yes, you may not think it's cute, but if that's the environment that I created at my company and you're going to come in and have a problem with it, yes, you're not going to fit in, and I should not hire you.
But in terms of culture, you're talking about the ability to interact with other people in the company on a basis in which the person is able to get their job done.
I create the environment that I want for my company, and if I wanted to sit up all day long, blow our heads back, and shoot spitballs, then that's the environment that I created. And if you're going to have a problem getting hit with a spitball, then you don't need to come work for my company.
Well, first of all, I didn't say I did.
Hold on, Alabama. Go ahead, Philadelphia, and I've got a couple more calls to pick up. I've got to go take a break. I'll leave the phone lines open.
Yeah, the Michigan, only thing I wanted to say is that a lot of these suburban networks are becoming entrenched to the point where the private universities don't even select people based on merit really anymore. They're selecting these rich kids from the suburbs who are able to pay the cost, like in terms of the cost to be admitted, and to pay for their classes, and a lot of the poor people are not being selected into a lot of these top-notch colleges now because they're not able
to meet the cost of the tuitions.
And this is actively happening today. This type of stuff is happening. So a lot of these networks that people would need to get into these larger corporations – they're being shut down, and people in the suburbs are fearful of the economy, and they are more so trying to ostracize people who are in the lower income groups, namely if they're Hispanic or black. I mean, people are being ostracized now. The whole environment is changing.
I disagree, Philadelphia. Once you have experience, you can get – I mean, there are instances where it's like that. But you can get a job. I mean, once you got experience in IT, you can get a job in less than a month. I mean, it's not hard to do unless you got it takes a little longer.
But what I'm speaking of, I'm not speaking of people who are already in the workforce. I'm talking about kids that are coming out of high school or coming out of college now.
So what you're saying, people can't get in college? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not just speaking of like in terms of IT or anything else. I'm speaking across the board. These suburban networks of whites who live out in the suburbs who have access
Can I help you a little bit? Can I give another little spin on it? Basically, and I think Philly is he's right. What you're talking about, this Michigan, is these are just relationships, you know. And no matter what industry you look at, when you do the research, and I think we'll all agree to this, that, you know, who gets what and what positions is namely based off of who you know and relationships and the organizations you're attached to, the societies you belong to. I mean, the research is there. Now, as far as individuals being able to wiggle their way into IT jobs and things of that nature, of course that's possible. But when you're talking about groups of individuals, like the brother said, coming out of college, 5,000 and 6,000 and 7,000 African Americans graduating per semester with engineering degrees and things of that nature, is there a place for them within the culture? And the answer to that is absolutely not.
Well, Michigan, I don't even disagree with you. That's the point I was trying to make, was that they did. I felt like I aced the interview. I had done 2 or 3 interviews, did well, and then they just threw culture up. Like, I'm like, how? Like, we were cracking. If I felt like we had a good vibe on the interview, we cracked a couple of jokes. But I'm personally expressing to you guys that that's not really me, but you've got to be able to put that facade up to be able to even go in there. But, right. I mean, they just threw that up because, oh, we don't want to hire this black guy because he's, you know, 6'2", deep voice, 215, 220. I'm 5'6". What, that has a lot to do with it, too.
Absolutely.
I feel like they get intimidated and scared by that, more so because they feel like he's mad about racism. Even though they're projecting all this stuff on me without knowing anything about me. So I've had to come in. You got to tone it down. You can't even, like, on Friday, they will wear boots to work.
Have you ever heard the terminology become all things to all men? And see, that comes when you've been in society and see a person like for me, okay? Because I spent so much time in the Marine Corps and dealing with officers and having to understand how, okay, you gotta deal with officers. They have a whole different outlook, whole different mindset, whole different way of thinking. Okay? You have to be able to deal with them tactfully, you have to be able to assimilate, and when you leave, you do what you want to do. But when you're there, you have to do what you need to do to make it in that society. You see, in the corporate world, the corporate world does not have to adjust to you. You have to adjust to the corporate world. And once you get to a point to where you're high enough on the ladder, you know, you can change. You change it then. But when you
the corporate world is white. It's white culture. That's what it is. I'm just letting you know.
Yeah, but I'm going to say you something, Alabama. Now, the clarity that you just gave right there. See, what we do is analyze it without that clarity. That's just a code word for white culture.
Yeah.
There ain't no separate corporate culture and white culture.
Yeah, right. It's all
there ain't
the
no
same.
Separation.
And it's
when I come in the morning, I can't come in and be like, what's up, man? What's happening?
Right.
I can't do that. I got to come in and say, good morning, Mr. So-and-so.
But the whole thing is that might work for you, but we're talking about things that are a national trend. We're talking about large populations of people.
Right.
So everybody is not going to fit inside the same box. So we're starting to see trends happen where these African-American kids and these Hispanic kids cannot get into these suburban networks.
Well, I'm going to tell you what it is, though. I'm going to make a point. Let me make a point, though, Philly. Like, if you really look at it, there are certain trends in IT, like, for example, iPhone development or Android development. Now, there are a bunch of jobs that if you go to a university, you're only going to go to certain universities and get that type of training. You don't get that at universities. They still teaching COBOL, C++, Java, stuff they were teaching back in the 90s. In the early 90s, and now you can't compete with a guy coming from this university. He's already developing his iPhone apps. He's got 10,000 downloads.
Right.
These guys are going. So you got to be quick and nimble. Like that's how these HBCUs used to be, up on the beat, change. You had skills that were ready to be put right back in the work environment and start working that day. Whereas when you get out now and all you know is Java and C++, you got some white kid coming from MIT.
Yeah. Well,
MIT, but for some other university, he knows how to do iPhone development. He knows how to do, then they're going to get him the job.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter what the industry is. The most important thing, somebody has an internship. It's at the internship stage is when a lot of recent graduates have a hard time trying to break into any industry.
Hey,
it could be, finance, economics, IT, whatever. They have a hard time making that transition, and it's especially hard on Hispanic and African American kids from low income neighborhoods. It's especially hard for them to do.
Do you understand
the board? That's across the board today. That's happening,
dude. A program written or an app written don't care if you black or white.
You are living in a massive type delusion if you believe that.
Yeah. Norm, and that will never be the norm. Not all white kids can develop, you know, IT apps to that degree.
There
so
you go.
When you're analyzing something from a group perspective, though, South Carolina, you have to look at the norms and not individuals.
Right.
I'm back, and you can't talk on top of each other. Hey, Michigan, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Tracy. How are you?
Good. What are you guys talking about in there?
Well, how we get our shoes out of this knot. That's it in a nutshell. We got our shoes tied in a knot.
And I heard somebody talk about the King's English and being able to speak it. It is true. If you can speak the King's English, but if you have a good dialect, it will affect your getting a job. Yeah,
well, that's the thing, Tracy. I was just talking about in IT. When recruiters call me, I get a lot of times when they call me, they're like, oh, man, they're happy that I'm American. I speak English. I don't need a green card. I'm not, because half of them come over here and they lie about their resume. They claim they got 10 years worth of experience, can't even log into the database. But that's what happens. But they stick together. They stick together, and they're coming over here and they see what's hot and they do it. And I think a lot of black people that I know, most black people don't even know about IT, but that's one of the industries that all of the Indians that say, look, we're just going to take over this one industry. And they focus like a laser beam, and they're taking it over.
Hold on, Philadelphia. But let me say this. IT is the ability to be able to create anywhere you are if you choose to. Because in IT, it's really, really not about the color, hue, and or dialect. It's about what you can do. Trust me, if we can all become anonymous, We don't even know what anonymous looks like. Anonymous is crazy. But Anonymous can write a program that America wants. The question is, can we become who that is? Can we become that hacker? IT, you know, technology is a whole nother monster. And right now, if you can come up with a pair of glasses, the man who came up with the touch screen to where we have our phones and all that, do we really care what color the man is?
Yeah, but see, Tracy, what you leave out of the equation, the statements that you're making, they're correct statements. They're good if you're giving a pep talk for individuals to be all they can be. And I'm not taking away from any of that. Now, same thing with South Carolina. But you have to put that talk into context of cultures and nations and the world.
Oh, man.
And if you don't put that in the – you see what I'm saying? If you don't put that into context, you're sending these children out there disarmed.
Let me say this
to you.
You
can't disarm them like that.
Let me say this to you. The difference between you and I is Barack Obama and Al Sharpton.
Who?
The difference between you and I.
One is polished and one is not.
No. It's not about polish. President Obama walked out onto that stage, and he walked out there knowing that he could win because he didn't care the color of the skin that he was in.
Are you kidding me?
Well, President Obama's biographical background.
Hey, dude, I don't want to hear about his biographical background.
Do you think Barack
I'm
Obama is the president because he put in his head he wanted to be president, Tracy?
You missed
my point.
Do you
really believe that?
You missed my point. You got to dig deeper into what I said.
No, there's no deeperness to what you said.
There is more depth into what I said. Local call, your mic is on.
How you doing, Tracy?
Hey, how you doing, darling?
I'm doing all right. Got a day off.
About time. How's school?
I'm making it.
Okay.
I know how stupid I am now.
Oh, you know, you ain't stupid.
You know what? I'm listening to your conversation, and my comments are constructive. I don't mean to demean either of these two brothers. I just want to think about what I said. I'm listening to what you said you've done in life. I guess we all have went through these doors, and we got that interview, that job, whatever. But I didn't go in there thinking black versus white. I went in there thinking if they're going to pick one brother, it's going to be me. And I always got a hit. So what do you think about that?
That's what I'm saying.
Good attitude.
That's what I'm saying. The problem that we have is
we positive attitude anytime you go in any situation.
That's right. Yeah,
No.
Tracy?
I got young people using race as crutch, and they ain't never seen a race. They walking. Listen.
No, it's not about using race as a crutch. It's about being realistic about the way the world
is. You
don't
have to be real. You just got to know.
The attitude that brother just had is no different from him and another brother dressing up in blackface. Sam, I'm going to be the best genius when I get in front of the
mic.
When you do not go outside and travel outside of your culture, you have tunnel vision. Unless you have gone out and tried to find out and get inside the quote-unquote white man's head and see what he thinks, or get inside the Hispanic's head, or get inside whomever, the Indians head, and understand where they're coming from and find out why they wear the little red dot on their head instead of you looking at them like they're crazy, find out about their culture. This is something that black people don't do, and we point the finger at them. They should assimilate to us when we refuse to go outside of our own neighborhood to find out what's going on with them. No, I wouldn't hire you. I wouldn't hire you. I don't care who you are.
And let me say this. We fail to realize what we have done. You know, it's like Oprah Winfrey. Oprah Winfrey has not forgotten she's black. Michael Jackson did. Tiger Woods don't know. We're not talking about not removing yourself from knowing that you are in this black skin, so you don't know what we're going to get hit with. That's not what I'm saying. But using it as a way to disable your opportunity is another. We find that young people who come from inner city schools, when they go into all white universities, which most of them are, have a harder time assimilating inside of those universities than they do if they come out of a multicultural area or a suburban area.
We need to be honest with that. Let me finish, let me finish. So when you understand that, which is actually something that we do not teach, and we do not have black businesses who can actually help cultivate to equalize and give some of the people experience. But when it comes to education, education is not forgetting who you are, but it's beginning to know that I can overcome all obstacles in front of me because of who I am.
No, it's
and
not.
If you,
well,
yes,
not,
it is.
But that's not education.
That is education.
What everyone on reads is there's an author, his last name is Richwine, his first name is Jason Richwine. He wrote a report for the Heritage Foundation. It's on the internet now. They can look up his name. His last name is spelled R-I-C-H-W-I-N-E.
Get to the point.
Richwine, and it basically is saying that he does not believe that the Hispanic people who are immigrants are going to reach any kind of IQ parity with whites in America.
Listen to me, hold on, stop. I don't care. I don't care what you're going
to view.
No, it's not the dominant view. It's the view that they want people to have. And if you say
today,
it,
which is causing a lot of suburban.
If you say it often enough, people will believe it. It is a view that they want people to be inferior to other people. Yes, we know that there is a European ruling class, and they want you to be inferior to anything that is European.
You can easily
look
that article up on the internet.
I don't care what the article says.
Yeah,
just because it's written on paper don't mean I got to believe it.
Right, yeah. It's more so about not what's the dominant belief, but if that dominant belief is within people who control the code.
Yeah.
That's the point. If in fact those individuals, and it is true, who control the institutions within the culture believe that, thus then those institutions and the culture moves off of that.
Michigan.
That perspective is okay. But
Michigan,
you're both
this
right.
is the issue.
You're both right.
But what I'm saying is, I don't care. Yesterday I was talking about building a deck, and everybody's told me that I can't build a deck out of pallets. So I want you guys to know something. I'm going to build this deck out of pallets if people walk on it and go straight through the floor. Because I'm not going to listen to what everybody else says about me building my deck out of pallets and it not working. Because I'm going to try it. And the problem that we have with the underclass community is that we stopped trying. See, they told people that you can't read, you can't do this, you can't do that, and they tried to go through this. And what has happened is when we began to go up this mountain and began to plateau, then somehow people got shot, and we went back down, and now we don't read at all, and we've got books everywhere.
Tracy, one of the worst things somebody told my mom was this. You know the white folks ain't gonna let you get but so high, so big, and then they're gonna shut you down. That's the same thing I'm hearing from Michigan.
That's a perfect assessment. What you just read that wrong, South Carolina. Inside of a people culture, that's exactly what will happen.
The only way that's the worst thing she could have told you.
But
the
this
only
is
the worst thing
in their family tries to hear that same cliche.
Huh?
Philadelphia was talking on top of everybody, so we don't know what anybody said.
That's not what you're hearing from me, South Carolina. That's not what you're hearing. You can't hear what I'm saying. I understand that. But that is not what you're hearing from me. That was actually a good assessment of what a culture does, what your mother told. She's absolutely right. Now, as an individual, can you scratch your way up to the top? Man, would you please get out of this mind state that this is an individual thing?
It is not. Let me finish the statement. I have a problem. People call me and ask me, can you help me get a job? Can you help me get in the door? Can you help me do this? I can do this. I'm trying to start my own landscaping business. So somebody calls me and says, Tracy, I need somebody to do some lawn work around my house, and I've got several acres. Do you have somebody? I said, you know what? Call A, B, and C. And A, B, and C, I know, you know, they're hustling. They ain't got a whole lot of money. They can't do, you know, a whole lot. But the person who actually needs the work done, they've got all the equipment that they need to do all the work on their property so that they can get paid and still use the other person's stuff. So they go, and instead of them going to work and doing what they're supposed to do, getting there early, coming home late, doing the job, you know, I get a phone call saying, hey, my gas cans are missing.
Ray them stole the flowers.
Whoa, let me finish, Michigan, My gas cans are missing. And I'm going, what? So I get on the phone, I call Ray, where the gas? Oh, man, I forgot, they in the van. But when you going back, take the gas cans back. I don't know when I'm going to go back out there. I got some things I got to do, you know, my kid and my daughter and my wife. And so, I tell you what, I'll pick up the gas can and take the people the gas can back. No, I got it. I do it. I got it. So the gas can, so I get another phone call later on. About, do you have Ray Ray's number? I'm like, Ray Ray moved. But do you know if Ray Ray took my lawnmower with him when they moved?
Yeah.
Now, I want you to hold up. Now, I want you to understand, now these people paid him good, took care of him well, you know, trusted him with their grounds and their house. So I get a phone call, and I call and say, Ray Ray, where the lawnmower? So now, you got to understand, this is not an individual thing that now has become collective.
Okay.
Because hold up. So now I am now trying to change the culture of the mindset that has been indoctrinated into people about how people of color act. So now, Michigan, my question to you is, uh-huh, is it individual or is it collective?
When you're talking about black people as a whole, that's collective. And I think...
Philadelphia, you filibuster. Hold on, Michigan.
Okay.
Philadelphia, you filibuster. And until you stop doing that, I have to mute you. Go ahead, Michigan.
All right. The thing about, even with the example that you just gave, Tracy, you'll find that in every ethnic group or race. But when you have a functioning culture where businesses are plentiful, what can happen within a white culture is they'll fire Jody, and then they'll bring in Jimmy, and he'll start cutting the grass. You see what I'm saying? Blacks, you know, so that example of you running into a bad black contractor is not a good example to try to set the stage for what our group problem is.
Listen to what I'm saying.
Not all black contractors would do this.
Listen. Ray Ray,
right?
Said that Ray Ray's wanted to start a business. Now, how many Ray Rays do we all know? And how many Ray Rays have you given opportunity to and opened up door for Ray Rays? And Ray Ray's has come back, and you now got to go buy somebody a lawnmower because you feel bad because you referred Ray Ray to the people.
Again, Tracy, again, it's just like with the mayor of Atlanta when he said, I understand where black businesses are. He said, I'm in a position, and I'm going to continue to develop them until they can reach where they need to go. Did he have some bad contractors that he had to fire along the way? Yes. But
Sweetie,
because he had that certain mind state, he continued to do that, and now he's produced, I think, the biggest construction company, black one, in the United States. So there's something else that goes along with just...
Listen to what I'm saying. But you got to understand the compassion that goes with it. Go ahead. I'm going to let you in South Carolina. But the compassion that goes with this is that we understand and we know that I ain't lying on Ray Ray today, because we all got a Ray Ray. But what I'm saying is some things are collective and some things are individual. But the problem that we have is we've got to raise the bar so that we can hire Ray Ray and beat Ray Ray so Ray Ray won't do that again. Because if we don't beat Ray Ray out of what Ray Ray's doing, Ray Ray's going to make it bad for the next person who comes along who wants a job. Go ahead, South Carolina.
You know, the thing about it is, Ray Ray, if what would have happened if Jackie Robinson did what Ray Ray did?
We'd be in trouble.
Larry Doby did what Ray Ray did.
We'd be in trouble.
We would still be in the Negro Leagues, probably. You know?
South Carolina, man.
Let him finish.
We've got to understand. At one point, we're collective, but when we are in that environment, we have to understand that we are individual. We are individuals representing
a collective.
And if all these folks see is Joe Blow coming in with his pants sagging and so on and so forth. That's all they're going to know. Just like black people, I don't know if the problem they see is a bunch of white folks riding around on horses with hoods on their heads. That's exactly the image we're going to have.
But the problem
at some point, we have got to understand this is not about black, it's not about white, it's about green. And the quicker we understand that, the quicker we can take control of what we need to be in control of. Right now, they got us running around like daggone puppets on a string.
And again, this is the mainstream media and the mainstream media and the people and the elitists that are around, and the elitists do not have a color of European, of white. The elitists that are around, they make sure that the perception that you have in your mind become your reality. And then we come and feed it individually. And that's something that we're going to have to be cognizant of and understand that when you look at a black person, you look at them in stereo because we have been cultured to look at everyone in stereo when it comes to the negativity of what happens.
How many years?
Anytime something happens, don't you? Most of us that are African American pray, I hope they ain't black.
Do you know who Alexander Dumas is?
Don't know.
Alexander Dumas, she's the one who wrote The Three Musketeers and The Count of Monte Cristo. I bet there's not very many people in your listening audience knows that the man was black. But see, in our mind, we assume and just say, okay, that's a white man. Shonda Rhimes is black. Got three highest rated shows in the entire country right now. On TV, black.
Again, when you're giving pep talk and you're trying to motivate young people, that is exactly what you. Wait a minute, I'm not even disagreeing with you because I'm just assessing what you're doing. That is, you're supposed to give those examples when you're trying to bring the best out of individuals. So. I don't get you guys' point. I'm not disagreeing with trying to bring the best out of individuals.
Bring out those examples of good people, okay?
Yeah.
Other folks are pushing the stereotype that, okay, these folks are evil. You got to keep your guard up. Instead of trying to tell them, hey, you got to learn what is going on in their society. You got to learn how they think, what they're doing, and integrate that into yourself when you're in that society. If you go to a formal dinner party, do you know which fork to use?
And does it make a difference when you go into a job interview if you don't know how to assimilate to the culture in which you're trying to interview for?
Exactly.
Okay, so I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, where's the argument?
Hold on. I got it. Chicago, your mic is on. 506, you're next.
Well, I've been holding for a while.
I want to go back to
Barack Obama being confident of knowing he was going to win. In my eyes is that, and don't cut me off, Tracy. I want to make my statement first. Please don't cut me off. in my eyes, Barack Obama, of course, sees America as an immigrant. And that's because his mother is white, and he was raised in Hawaii, and his father was African. Also, if you look at the clear dumpers, every president or person that's running for office, presidency, the one that got the most Jewish help and monies always wins the election. And you see Barack Obama in 2008 and 2012 got the most Jewish help money, and he got elected.
That's not the
point. That's why he was so confident that he was going to win.
That was not the point. That was not the point. That was. I mean, I could care less, but that's not the point.
Okay.
The point is, it's the difference between Al Sharpton and Barack Obama. The mindset that was Barack Obama has never been the victim, nor has he ever promoted victimology. He is never the victim, and he does not promote victims.
Hold on.
Al Sharpton is always the victim, and he's always on the side of the victim, and he's always working on making sure people are the victims. And there is a difference between the two of them. That's why one is in the White House and one is on MSNBC. And the problem with African Americans.
Hello.
The problem with African Americans is that we have propagated and we are perpetuating a culture going back to the original conversation of I am still the victim instead of the victor. Obama has a victor mentality, where Al Sharpton has a victim mentality. And we need to exchange that, because what's happening is our victimization is killing us, because we keep on promoting I am the victim instead of the victor. Go ahead, 506.
Once again, a great show. I'm gonna take a chance here. This is Marky Mark. You know that, Tracy.
Yeah, Marky Mark.
I've been listening to this show religiously. Sometime I'll call in. I listen every day. I really do. I'm going to give you a challenge, because I had an appointment that just got canceled, and I see myself going by where your digs are at. You line up your best callers. I'll agree to give you 1 hour of my time, which is very expensive, by the way. One hour of my time, and I am going to set Black America straight as to what is wrong with it from the eyes of a white person and from somebody who's really been on both sides of the fence. And I'm going to tell it like it is. And if you don't like it, fine. But I say get your best callers there, because I'm going to let you have it.
And when are you going to do it?
I'm going to talk about why.
When?
I think.
When?
I'm coming here in 10 minutes if you let me.
Well, hurry up, because the best are here. And I want to see you.
He can start with me.
Carolina, get him ready, man. I'm gonna
this
lay
Michigan.
Out.
Let him start with me. Have him set me straight.
You better be
he
ready,
said he's
pal.
On his way.
Go.
So he's about 10 minutes away, which means we've got a good hour and a half to get. Listen, I got to take a break. I'll be right back. I'm going to turn the phone lines on so you guys can talk while I'm on the break.
Hello?
Yeah, hello?
Hello?
It's no difference between Barack Obama and Al Sharpton.
There is no difference.
Al Sharpton is getting paid.
Right.
NBC.
Right. Al Sharpton is an employee of MSNBC,
and he's following
the agenda
that the liberals
in government want him to follow.
Bingo.
So they're both
Bingo.
Being paid by the same people.
Bingo.
But the whole problem that this show doesn't realize
but Tracy
is that
don't see
it's
that.
Not about adapting to the culture of white corporation. It's the fact
Bingo.
That these kids that are coming out now, they don't have access. These suburban networks are deeply entrenched.
Okay,
and because
a lot of these
middle-class whites are fearful of immigration, they only want to let their own kids into these corporations now. They're not giving you access as they did in the past.
And Philly, but here's what you should say right after that statement, which is what they're supposed to do. And that brings finality to that. In other words, if you don't tell them that's what they're supposed to do, you're leaving it open as if they're doing something that they're not supposed to do and we can change it.
Yeah.
That's what they're supposed
right,
to do, man.
Right, yeah. But also, you know, this
well,
notion
do you agree
that they
that?
Believe...
Do you agree
well,
that that's what they're supposed to be doing?
Well, yeah, well, they're supposed to protect their institutions, but they're also
right,
supposed
then.
To do things based upon merit and provide avenues of access and opportunity to people that are coming from a different strata than they
now,
are.
Now, where you get that from? Now, where you getting that from, Philly? Who told
well,
you they're supposed to do that?
Well, but...
the Bible?
Based upon the fact that a lot of people... you know, their families work, they're paying taxes, they're serving in the army and like different branches
Philly.
Of the military.
Philly, you're not
so
that
therefore
green, man.
They should have access of avenues to opportunity as everyone else if
Philly.
They're doing all these things.
Philly, man, I've listened to you talk on this show, man. You're not
yeah.
that green. You're not that green to believe that.
No,
they
right.
Should, any area where blacks have engaged in this culture, I don't care to what degree, whether it be service-based, you name it, man. There ain't no
yeah,
gray area
yeah.
now.
They've yeah,
shown
right.
you what they think about you.
Yeah, right.
All
right,
so don't bring this
yeah, but,
me
right,
out of world,
right.
and because you're paying taxes, you're supposed to have the same access to this culture. You
yeah.
know better than that.
Yeah.
And don't disarm the people and make them think that, man.
Yeah.
And the thing is, what Tracy needs to separate, if you're talking about collectively, then black folks are getting at the end of the stick. If you're talking about individually, the black folks want to succeed and get what they want, it could be a little bit much easier. But if you're talking about collectively, the numbers already show you blacks is at the bottom of the list. So, I mean, I don't know where she's coming with on that.
She don't use, that's the point, doesn't it seems like they don't use historical facts, particularly when you're trying to give analysis of group issues.
Right.
And it's hard to understand them, and you can clearly see that they're not using any type of historical basis when they're trying to give analysis to group problems.
Well,
how do you deal with a person like that?
Well, that's why I gave that article of this guy from the Heritage Foundation. These are the belief systems that they're operating on now.
Right.
Do all
black people think alike? So if all black people don't think alike, how the hell you expect all white people to think alike? If the Heritage Foundation puts that out, that's from a certain demographic, man. Come on, now be realistic. Let's be realistic.
And that's what I'm saying. See, when you and you're right, South Carolina. That's why I said Philly. You know, when you bring up stuff like that, just because an article says, but I knew what you were trying to do, and that's why, like Amos Wilson said, he was lecturing some black students. And so one sister got up and said, well, I don't see no color. All I see
yeah.
is human. And he said, well, what you have to understand, young sister, is it's not whether or not you see color because
yeah.
you ain't no position to control anything. It's whether or not the person who's in control sees color. What's relevant?
But even though that's coming from, you know, one perspective, the point I'm trying to make is that these belief systems are there in these corporate structures. They do believe these things.
Right.
And it's
Which
not
is
just
true.
One article,
right.
and it's not just one article, because this guy had a whole list of references from other people who were writing articles that happened to be the same as his. So this is a consensus of opinion
yes.
out here today. And it's becoming worse because the economy is changing. And these people... In these corporations, they are fearful of losing their place.
Well, I don't know, man.
I got a question, fellas.
We're in deep trouble, man. Just listening, man. We're in deep trouble.
At what point do we quit blaming white folks or Hispanics? Or the Koreans.
I'm not trying to.
Philadelphia.
And this show does not want to be realistic all the time.
Philadelphia, I didn't interrupt you. Let me say what I'm saying. Okay. At one point, we controlled 100% of the hair care market. We don't now. Only the Koreans are doing it. Why? Because we gave it away. At one point, we had 100% ownership of BET. We set what was going to be played on the TV. on BET. What did we have? What did we do? We saw he got sold out. Now, whatever's coming over BET, guess what? At one point, we controlled 100% of the HBCUs.
Yeah.
Guess what? We don't control them anymore. We do not control them. They
can
are
I
being
ask you
controlled
a question?
By those folks that finance
yeah.
white
right.
folks,
South.
White corporations, white foundations, like who? What was one
yeah,
of them?
Yeah, South. South.
Yeah.
And to answer your question, I think the word that you use of blaming white folk is, I mean, I think you're just characterizing it wrong. Now, I'll give you an example. For instance, you just said about the HBCUs. You go back and do a historical study of HBCUs. They were not funded by black people. They never have
been. Right.
Now, you go show me the history that shows that. So to say that we had
J.P.
those
Morgan and Rockefeller.
Is ludicrous. All right. Now, when you talk about even BET, these are business ventures. The
yes.
corporate sponsors and the advertisement that made BET what it was not black dollars.
And what
go do your research.
Hold on.
What do you mean we
had We got to build what we need to build to make sure that we are a successful culture. On the other hand, you're saying we got to take the white man's dollar. Now, which one you going? Which one is it? Take the white
but
man's
I never,
dollar.
I never.
The white
what,
man's
here's
dollar
what, here, here's what you. Here's what you're missing that I'm saying, South, that you'll never agree with. What it is that black folk are after, they will never have in a white man's culture. You have to build your own. Now, you can do like other ethnic groups and snatch out resources out of other men's and women's cultures, but ultimately, what you're after will not happen here. You have to build your own.
Right.
That part you'll never get.
You have to have your own cultural identity, and everyone and every ethnic group that comes here, they have a nationality. Every ethnic group that comes here and is able to succeed, they have a home country that they can rely upon. That's the difference with African Americans. African Americans have been placed into a role where they have to beg white America for everything. And white America does not respect them for that. So that's the reason why, as an ethnic group, they don't succeed in America.
Dude, you got to give me a break here. Philadelphia, do you realize who dictates the black culture in America? A white man.
Well, he's supposed to. He created it.
You take the white man's money. When you take the white man's money, guess
what? That's
what
I just said. Is they rely too much on
a bunch of step and fetches. That's it.
Right.
Black culture is a product of white of European culture.
Yeah, it's a product of European culture.
You don't get it.
And black Americans do not have that cultural identity. They do not have that nationality. And that's the reason why they don't succeed as an ethnic group.
And he's absolutely right.
Black culture
is not separate from European
years,
culture.
You're talking about 400 years of black people living in America. They have assimilated into the American culture. So what?
No, European culture, not American culture.
African.
European culture.
Dude, yeah,
you realize
no
there are
sustain.
Black people in Africa? There are black people in Europe? There are black people on the Asian continent? There are black people in Antarctica? They are black
America is a country of
which
immigrants.
One is it?
But when you come to America, you have to have
okay,
an identity when you come here.
No. That's what I mean.
People, you can't place your identity into the majority population.
The in Australia,
okay,
they're black.
Where
did they come from?
I'm black
man.
And black. Okay, Mark's in studio. He said 10 minutes. He made it in less than 10 minutes. And so we're going to start here because he is giving us a challenge. So you're going to tell me what's wrong with black America and how to fix it.
I am going to tell you from the point of view of white America, black America, and from – listen,
well, you,
I've
you
been
can't
on both sides. I mean, I have
–
and, you know, and these guys in the chair, I listen to them every day. You got a unique show. You got followers all over the country, and you know what? I'm going to give it to you. So if you're faint of heart, if you're going to be easily offended –
Mark,
you know,
you
change your
tell
radio.
Me get to
you
his point.
To
tell him
to
get to his
out,
point.
Right?
Like you do black folk. Get to your
what
point.
What you say, Michigan?
Tell him to what get to his point like you do black people.
Wait a minute, I got to let him know a couple of rules here. You know you got to get through me.
Absolutely.
To get to the door.
Absolutely.
There's
so
no
I'm gonna watch to that.
You know there's no door on that side of the room, right?
Yeah, you know, you're a bit of a royalty around here now, so I got to watch.
Okay.
And so, go ahead, Marky Mark. Get to the point. You got a couple minutes because they want to beat you up already.
Well, I mean, Michigan. You know, I listen to you every day in South Carolina and all and the rest. Listen, let me tell you something right now. In 50 years, if you keep going the black community in the same direction you're going without leadership, you are going to either A, be totally assimilated into the population and lose all black identity, or B, you will be so ineffective, there will be so many minority groups ahead of you, you will be insignificant. You will be back as a slave, so to speak, in this economy. You cannot, look, you have no national leadership. You have no agenda. You have a black man in the White House. He's not black. He's not done one thing for you. Tell me, who are your leaders and what is your strategy to put people to work? You can't even stay off marijuana to go pass a damn drug test.
Well, first off, it's racist in the first place in America to say you have a black leader. First off, black folks in America are Americans. So,
well, no, let's cut through that. Let's be real. Let's be real.
I want you guys to be real.
I'm not here to say
who
that
is telling you the truth.
Who is the Italian leader in America? Who is the Indian leader?
Hello.
You think black Americans are treated the same as white Americans? If you want to talk,
absolutely not. They're not Americans.
Thank you.
So hey man, you're gonna agree on a whole lot.
Well, tell me. We talked about Al Sharpton. We know I met Jesse Jackson. I've been around, you know. I won't get into the people I've met. But I see no national plan to get any black people to work, to make them part of the conversation. I see a bunch of people voting Democrat, getting their checks, and much like the Chinese with the British who addicted the entire country to opium, black America has a problem. With marijuana, you can't even pass a drug test. It's so much a part of your culture.
Well, I think you're making a very biased statement to say that because of the fact that you also have a lot of white kids that are on dope as well.
Is he telling the truth?
No, he's
Reefer's,
not telling.
Reefer's the choice thing. The whites might like something else, but you tell me. Tell me who the national leadership is.
Who's the marijuana are white? And also, like, and but the problem is that these so-called leaders, as you call them, they are working for other organizations. They have not formed any kind of national plan because there was no system put in place to build institutions and businesses that would be able to employ the majority of black Americans. And this was a process that occurred over 100 years ago.
Yes, you did. We had a whole industry all to ourselves that we gave away.
Well, but
we had a whole industry. Hold on.
But the institutions are not in place today. Evidently, the institutions were sold off and they were not maintained, but they are not in place today. But you cannot point at people who are in the media who work for other corporations and point them out as being like some type of leaders of black people. That's not the case. And
okay, go ahead, 724.
Hey.
Yes.
Hi, Trace. Can you hear me?
Hey, Larry. Yeah.
How you doing?
Good.
I concur with Mark. I mean, we don't, I mean, I'll give you an example. I was in your, Jeff and I did your show, the pastor or preacher was in there talking about the
credit
union that they were trying to do, right? You would think that if you would have the right leadership around that particular item, that they would have no problem raising $150,000 to get started. Because
Amen.
Then you have some control. But we have no leadership, and then when guys do step to the forefront to be a leader, like I mean, the most recent one I can think of is the good doctor down there from Johns Hopkins, and
that's Carson.
He'll get crucified, and we don't, as a people, step up and say, "Hey, this ain't right. This brother's got to, you know, he's just saying something. Maybe he disagreed with our black president, but he's got something to say." But we'll allow people to just destroy any African American that wants to step to the table. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
Larry,
for me,
Larry, you make a good point. Let me put it this way. Maybe you could tell me, and then I'll cross-examine you. I've done that a few times.
Okay.
Why can't Black America, and don't tell me that you haven't withdrawn and circled the wagons, and you really have your own culture. You don't want to assimilate. You want your own way of talking, dressing, code.
Mark, let me help you out, because I gotta take up for my folks. You got white folk have to take some of the responsibility for the culture that they have created.
No doubt.
For Black folk.
Oh, I'm not here to be an apologist for the whites.
So when you look at weed in America,
mm-hmm.
weed was okay on the streets of America as long as it didn't cross the 8 mile.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So what has happened is, and they have desensitized African Americans and made it to where it has become their recreational drug. And it is the discriminator when it comes to workforce, because beer is the white man's drug of choice and it's legal.
True.
Whereas weed is the Black man's drug of choice and it's illegal, which causes discrimination. But what has happened is we are not listening to the voices that we hear, only the machine that controls us. And the machine that controls us is making us to where we are so addicted to entitlements
mm-hmm.
that we can't hear the people that tell you that you need to become free. And free means you've got to go to work, you've got to get an education, and you've got to stand on your own 2 feet. We have a hard time bringing our resources collectively together.
Well, you hit it on the head. You know, maybe we're not disagreeing, but let me challenge you and your high-intellect callers, because these people know what they're talking about. You tell me, before your Black community disappears from America, because it's going, the Hispanics are coming and so forth, what are you going to do to reverse that?
But the question is, what infrastructure is going to help me stand up?
Well, No. Whitey ain't going
to
help you.
Whitey's going to have to help me, because I can't get rich on Blackie money.
Mm-hmm. They just, listen, they control, they have you addicted
but listen to what
to
I'm
reefer
saying.
And to handouts.
But those of us who try to help, and to bring our community out of the slavery that they're in. And when I say slavery, I'm talking about the slavery or the indoctrination of their mind. If they don't put us in position to pull them out, we will never come out from where they are. And let me say this about white folks. White folks like to get, they want to be around passive Black people.
Absolutely.
They do not want to be around Black people who are going to push their envelope and make them feel uncomfortable. And the only ones that are going to make them feel uncomfortable are the ones who are the ones that can bring them out of the mess that they're in. And so unless I am elevated to position as a African-American woman, that I can bring African-American men up with me, I lose.
You hit it on the head. And, you know, I'm not going to patronize you. I'll say it one more time, because I listen to a lot of stations. And I've been on Bill O'Reilly. I've been on Anderson Cooper. I've been on a lot of shows, guys. And I'm here to tell you that this talk show host here in town, she's one of the few that is trying to get something done. Now, I'm going to ask you, what is your strategy for empowering yourself and bringing Black America into the conversation?
But this is it. Let me say this. We just had an election here. The number is 347-945-5229. And someone made a point to me last night. They said, Tracy, if the Black radio station had been here and had been up, guess what? The man who won would have never won.
Could be.
If 101.9 had been here, mm-hmm. the Black radio station that they once had been here, John McNally would not have won the seat for mayor.
And they know it.
Now, but when the radio station is here, we don't know how to support it, and white folks won't buy it. So how do I change the paradigm when you take my communication source away from me?
Well, in a short word, it's this. I think if you hired me as a consultant for Black America, if you could just listen to that parameter,
but me hiring you,
I would start. You got to start over. I mean, what you're doing is absolutely accomplished. You think because you get NBA players and BET, and you're just reinforcing stereotypes that are fantasies.
But remember, the fantasy's coming from a larger medium, and they keep everyone, again, like I said at the top of the hour when I started the show, we want to think that this is black and white.
Mm-hmm.
This is have and have not. Anyone that is that's making less than $100,000 a year is in the have not category.
Well, go right outside your studio down to the south side, like many American cities, like Detroit and Youngstown and Cleveland. You know, when I talked to Senator Voinovich a long time ago when I lived in Cleveland, I sat down with Benjamin Hooks, who was the head of the NAACP at the time. Voinovich came out and told him, we have two cities. We have black Cleveland, we have white Cleveland. It's an acknowledgement. Now, what are you going to do to get people, right now as we speak, to get them off of the welfare rolls and to go get off the drugs and go and apply for a job or a technical school or start a shop?
Yeah. But I think you're giving very simplistic answers and questions to very complex problems. And
well,
these are problems that have existed.
Not complex.
This problem has existed well over 50 years, and the whole start of it, like in terms of its genesis, was in the time of the 60s is when all of this started. And what you have to do is people who are theologians or people who are ministers, they have to make an attempt to rebuild the black family.
So you're saying that the black church could be a power center?
Hey, absolutely.
Hold on, Percy. See, I can't. There's a couple things here. We got to talk about family. You can't build the black family until you build the black man. You can't build the black man until you give the black man a job and give him an education. You can't give him an education if nobody will hire him.
Right. Absolutely.
So we got a hamster on a wheel that goes nowhere. And what has happened is they have put the black woman over the black man so that we can press him down.
But
now
the reason
we agree,
why he will not
agree with the problem
is not completely based upon his race, because when the African people who were immigrants from West Africa, when they first went into Europe, they did better than people who were from those countries because they did have access to the institutions of higher learning. They were able to get the entry-level jobs, and over time they did better. It was their attitude as an immigrant.
I understand all that. Let me just say something to you. In physics, they have a principle. It's called Ockham's razor, and it means sometimes the simplest solution is the best. Okay. Now, you see the problem out here. Tracy really laid it out. I mean, it's a catch-22, all right? And, you know, whether it's a black man out of the home or a white man out of the home,
it's all the same.
I'm convinced it's the same, and I could speak from experience. What are you going to do to get new leadership in black America?
I don't need a leadership. All we need is opportunity. The question is, when are we going to get the opportunity to do stuff?
No one's going to come up and give it to you.
But even when you go to climate, they cut you off at the heel.
Of course they do.
No, you're missing my point. Right now in the city of Youngstown, if they had allowed things to flourish and give them education, we would not be in the situation we are in when it comes to education in the city.
Well, the education here is a...
So why did we do it? Why did they rape the Youngstown City School District during the 70s and the 80s of its resources, make sure that the black kids did not learn?
Absolutely.
So whose fault was that? Was that black America or was that white America?
White America. And let's assume for this argument that it is... It's problematic. In white America, the slavery continues. My point is, what do you do from here? Because Al Sharpton is not going to lead you to the promised land. Martin Luther King is no longer around. You don't have any practical leaders that can get a national soapbox.
Hey, I got to take my break. I'll be right back.
I think this caller that you have on currently, you know, he doesn't have a clue. Because this is a very complex situation which happened well over 50 years ago. And the reason why we're in the state we're in now, and to mention somebody like Jackson and Sharpton as being leaders of the black community, when everyone knows that's not the case,
That is
like
true.
He's not
what
giving
are you
about? No. Well, look. Sharpton and Jackson, most people I know do not consider them to be any kind of leaders of the black community. Most people see them the same way they see Tavis Smiley or anybody else on television. They're working for a media company. They're working for a media company, and they're making speeches. The only way you want to get any kind of resolution to these problems is you have to deal with the building of small types of businesses in the black neighborhood. That's the first step. You have to build some type of structure in terms of the black economy. That'll be the first step to solving these problems that black people are currently facing. And the second step is
Philadelphia.
To encourage.
Hey, brother,
you know,
Come on, man. Philadelphia.
Let the man talk.
I was just going to add, man, if you listen to that last guy, it should be quite obvious that there's, like I said many times, there's a certain white folks you can't work with.
Right.
Like if they come with you with that much nonsense that you guys are on weed and on the government, like that's the way he comes at you. A white dude comes at you with that. So, you black people can't do X, Y, and Z because you're on weed and you're on the government. There's certain white dudes you can't work with. I would just next that dude, find some white people that you can work with.
Majority of people on weed and on welfare are white people. Majority of people who smoke weed are white people. We're not talking about white people. We're talking about black people. You made a statement that most blacks looking for jobs are on weed and on welfare, when the case is you got a whole state out west that is in the process of trying to legalize marijuana. And most of the people in that state are white.
Exactly. You got it right on.
You're talking about black.
But the point was the white dude said that, though. The point was the white dude came on and started accusing black folks.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's obvious to me that this guy's got a problem. So he's not dealing with facts. Hey, you can't have it both ways, man.
You can't have it both ways. We were talking about black
law. Nobody's trying to have it both ways. But the whole reality of the situation is African American neighborhoods do not have ways, different methods to employ people, to knock down the door of some big company who does not want to hire them because of the way they are perceived.
This is why African Americans do not trust Republicans or black Republicans.
Diva, here's the problem. Let me say this. Philadelphia was built by you. What you got, Diva, is the man came on and made an observation. He made an observation. We are talking about
completely wrong. We just told you got a whole state out in the Midwest who was predominantly white. They want to legalize marijuana. They all smoke weed out there.
Hold on.
And a majority of people in the country who are on welfare are white on
Philadelphia.
So we were talking are completely biased. And for someone who's black, to sit back and try to listen to that, you have to be a very self-hating black person to even try to listen to
it. You have to be
extremely self-hating on your own self to sit back and try to listen to a statement like that.
That's how the black Republicans are, man. You just described them at the beginning.
When we started this conversation, we were talking about black people. Okay, a man came on and he's pointing out a certain specific.
The guy is talking nonsense.
No,
he's talking nonsense.
He said the problem
is that the community. Forget it. I'm not saying nothing else because you will not let me say at the half somebody like that on your program.
You know,
that's what they attract.
That's
what black people
attract. The whole level of self hate that you have for your own people. You have a lot of self hate.
It's not a matter of self-hate, it's a matter of realization. He made a very blank statement,
South Carolina. A very blank statement.
Diva, is the statement true? No, it's not true. The whole state of Colorado is predominantly white.
We're talking about white people.
Deflection.
It is not about deflection.
Diva, one at a time, guys.
Agreeing with the Johnson, and you're expecting me to go up to what he's saying when he has to sweep, when that community has to sweep around their own front door. It's not about deflection. It's about the truth of what he said.
Can I hold on, guys? Can I host my show now?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, go, please, Tracy.
Okay, just checking. Hey, the number is 347-945-5229. Guys in the chat room, hold on. Local call, your mic is on.
And Tracy, I just called back to say what you just did. It's to prove my point. It's an individual choice because you said as a woman, you wouldn't defend that guy up there in Cleveland.
No.
I would.
Why?
And that'd be that famous. That's one on my belt. I'm the one that defended the Unabomber. You know.
Well, when I say that, you have to understand he kidnapped and raped women. So why in the world?
I know about Melvin Belli, one of OJ's lawyers. I can't think of his name. That's what he was known for, defending the Boston Strangler. That's one in my belt.
Lee Bailey.
There you go.
Call me Johnny Cochran. I'm going after Johnny. Skip that. I'm not doing it.
But my point is, it's choices. It has nothing to do with a race. Like, let me ask you a guess, and I'll hang up. You said we have no leader, right?
Well, no. As far as I can see, no.
Okay, so who's the white man leader?
Well, I think that the institutions already, you know, we don't require, or in, when I say white man, let's try to say what King said. I mean, it's really, like Tracy said, it's the rich and the poor. I mean, do you think these people that own hedge funds and all that, they don't need leaders? They have Congress and lobbyists, so there's their leadership structure. They have Hilford, the Treasury.
Individual choice.
But let me say this. I got to say it this way. Those who are underserved need to have someone who's willing to sacrifice their life for those who don't know any better.
Correct.
The problem that – because the people who have – always have the front line of someone who's going to sacrifice their life for their agenda.
You go back to Spartacus.
No, listen to what I'm saying. I need someone not to speak for me, but to educate me and sit at the table so that when I'm not sitting there, they speak on my behalf. See, money always has money speaking on their behalf. People who do not have money never has anyone speaking on their behalf. That's why you have people who are poor. They always stay poor because no one actually goes and speaks on their behalf because they don't have the money to pay them.
Let me add in here, Tracy.
Go ahead.
I think that when you live in a society where the majority of people are white, you also need some white folks that you're going to be able to work with. There's no economic plan that says black folks, we just going to all work for ourselves. No economist is going to tell you that that's going to work out for you. What you have to do is you have to have some white folks that you can work with. So you have to be able to pick and choose the type of white folks that you can work with. And it, to me, it seems that someone will come on the radio or interview and say such a racist statement, I'm not necessarily say that guy is not entitled to his own opinion, but I would just make the decision that because of what that guy said, that's not a white person I would want to work with.
Listen, here's the problem. One at a time. May I say something, Tracy?
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't believe your guest there offered his services. He just made a statement, and again, I still haven't heard anybody dispute what he said. He said we have no leadership.
His statement is not accurate because, first of all, most people... You will not do that right now. Go ahead, Larry, finish.
Well, I mean, the man said we don't have any leadership, national leadership. You can't point to one. We don't. So, I mean, how is he wrong for coming on and making a statement? I mean, he didn't say, I want to be your leader. He said, made a statement. Nobody on this call and listening audience can dispute that. The guy said we have a problem with weed. We do. I can't right now, Tracy. They're in a huge hiring mode right now in Columbiana County for drivers, CDLs, to haul this water in and out of the place. Do you know what the biggest complaint coming back from them is? They can't get nobody to pass the drug test.
I know that. Now, you know that too.
Now, forgive this guy, this white guy, for coming and making a true and accurate statement. I would love to be able to dispute what he said. But the two things that I took away from what he said, lack of leadership and we have a drug problem, guess what? He was right. Now,
let me add on that. Hold on, Covina. He's going on to another paragraph.
You can hate the messenger, but you cannot dispute the message. That's what
I wish I could,
because I'm an African-American male. I wish I could say you're a liar. But guess what? You're telling the truth. So that's the biggest problem we have in our community is to be able to accept the warts. You know, we have a lot of strong suits, but we also have some problems. And when people tell you, I mean, I remember this 10, 15 years ago, Bill Cosby was complaining about the fact that all of our we didn't have any male role models in the house. Bill Cosby said that 15 years ago and was pillared by the likes of Jesse Jackson and the rest
and
of
Roland,
them. For,
and Roland
now,
Martin.
Look, yeah, and yeah, they ripped him to shreds. When African Americans should have said, you know what, you're absolutely right. We need to do something about it. And right now, because we didn't, you see what the results are.
You hear
so
that, Philadelphia?
And Tracy, you know, what got me and what I was going off in the chat room about is when he made that statement, it was an immediately folks wanted to jump on him. What Philadelphia said was, what about Colorado? What about all the white people in Colorado? That is deflection. He's talking about deflection, because he's making an inaccurate statement.
He's making a generalized statement, which is not complete.
What it is deflection. If we're talking about black people and the issues in the black community, do not deflect and talk about, well, the white folks having this problem too. That's not what we're talking about. You're talking about black folks and how to solve the problems in the black community. And if you cannot address the black community's problems honestly without bringing in those problems that face the white community, then you're not going to be able to address
keeping
it.
Jobs.
Because you're always going to deflect. You're going to deflect back to white people to make yourself look good. I mean, think about it.
Hold on.
Philadelphia, listen, Philadelphia, I'm going to call you in. You talk on top of people, and I cannot deal with it on terrestrial radio. Do you understand that? I will let you make your point, but you've got to let them make theirs, and then I will put you on top because you will not stop when you hear someone else talking. Now go ahead.
But first, the caller made a very generalized statement. He does not speak for all black men who are in the workforce.
We're not talking about all black men. We're talking about
the
majority.
No. First of all, he is not speaking for the majority. He is basically speaking for black men that he knows that happen to be around him. But
now, I'm using Labor Department statistics.
But the whole genesis of the problem has to do with far beyond any kind of weed or like any kind of welfare or whatever. It has to do with the fact you have to build economic institutions in the black neighborhoods. This is not happening. You have to make sure that the black families stay together. This is the job of the ministers and the churches to try to keep the families together. If you're able to do those two things, you will see a great change in a black men in America. You will see a great change because prior to the 1960s, black men worked on a regular basis because they had the jobs that they're trying to bring. The people from Mexico are taking the jobs that the black men had in the past.
Let me say this, Philadelphia. Let me interject here. Let me say this. And this is something that I hold dear to my heart. The church has a lot to do with it, but so does the family, and so does the woman. The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. And until African-American women understand that it is our obligation and it should be our responsibility to get into position to make sure that we can put black men back into position. See, if you're going to elevate me, then it is up to me to make sure that I make a pathway for a black male behind me so that he can become the head of his household
and institute a family structure again.
And let me call you out then, you people. Well, if you knew my background, you'd forgive me. But listen to me. Where are you, black men? Why aren't you at home?
Because you have emasculated the black man.
I haven't.
But the white man
has. How? How have we done it?
Oh, because a black man, when a black man wanted to work, black women, black, the white man would not allow him.
And so would you cry and take your marbles and go home and
no,
just
you,
disappear?
You
what do you,
you
do?
You can't cut a man off by the balls and think he's going to come back every day and get cut. It doesn't work that way. Because when he comes back home, I, as a black woman, I cut him on the other side. And what happens is they give me the promotion, and I come home, and I make the payment. I become the head of the household. So that he not only does he become emasculated in his home, he becomes emasculated in his workplace. So where does a man become the king of a castle when he has no castle to become king of?
That's the problem stated. Now, let's hear. Tell one of these learned gentlemen, tell me how you're going
to
overcome that.
Did you hear? You didn't listen to what I said.
Oh, yes,
hold on,
yes, I did.
What I said was, you've got to put black women in position, and then we're going to have to be able to put black men in position and get out the way.
I agree. Now, why isn't that being done?
Because I have an ego just like the rest of the women in the world.
The black men, they let the black women slap them around. The black men can't even stand up to women.
The problem is like, I don't know what kind of black people you hang around, but it's obvious to me that you have a very small scope of black people that you deal with. You know, you're dealing with a very narrow group of black people like in the place that you're in. So that's why you're making these generalized statements.
Philadelphia, who in the heck are you talking to?
I'm talking to your caller.
Okay. Go ahead, South Carolina.
Hello.
Listen, when you've got a to be free, we want to be free, but we want to empower the black man, but we're doing everything to tell the black man you are no longer needed in your society. You promote abortion, killing black babies. You're supporting same-sex marriages. Now, what does that do? This totally decimates the family. Not only that, it degrades the black woman and the black man. Okay.
Instead of
going out there and telling these young boys that they got to get off their mama titty and get out there and be responsible, we as our culture, we want to coddle them and tell them if they fail, it's the white man's fault. Not going to work.
Yeah.
You're not gonna build successful black men.
Well,
you
know,
doing
hold
that.
On to
well, like
no,
I don't know what
no,
black
no,
families
no,
you're
no,
talking
no,
about.
No. Go ahead, Chicago. I said you were next.
All right, please don't cut me off, Tracy, because I know you're really good at that when people make their statements. You have a solution.
It's my show.
Here's my solution. Here's my solution to the systemic racism in America. Black males, for what white society can do, you have nonviolent black males in prison. You pay $60,000 a year in tax dollars to house them. Except having nonviolent blacks in prison, can't you give them a skill trade, train them, have them get a skill trade, fix up these black neighborhoods, and pay them? Also, if a black male or any male doesn't want to finish high school, as soon as they become delinquent, they have no right. You come pick them up, and you put them in some kind of... Now,
is John Boehner and the Republican Congress going
to
set that up for you?
If you want to fix the problem, let's fix the problem.
Chicago, wait a minute, Diva. You can't
fix the problem.
Listen, I'm telling you, if you want to fix the problem, we need to have our own commerce in our own communities where we begin to hire our own.
Tracy,
but we can't.
100 times on your show.
I know. Listen to what I'm saying.
It takes
Chicago.
30 million out of the 40 million black folks to do that. And
Chicago.
It like
have you, Chicago.
Black, that's not
Maryland,
happening. So
you live.
To
listen,
the
Chicago.
Racism to be depleted. That's what white folks can do. And then you will start.
I don't need Chicago. Were you there in Chicago? Or were you there in Chicago when black healthcare industry was thriving? Were you alive then?
You're talking about like Luster products and all that?
Yes. Were you alive then?
Yeah.
How many black people did black folks employ?
stand for it a lot. But Tracy, look,
what?
Look,
how did it change the environment in which they live when they were working
look,
inside
Tracy,
of those companies?
Look, Tracy, I've said that thousands of times on your show.
I know that.
But it's going to take your black people that have the resources, the money, to get off their lazy ass, to come back to the neighborhoods of which they come from, and build an economic base.
They're not going to do that.
Well,
they're
not going to get anywhere.
They gave up.
Take $30 million out of the $40 million to do this.
Hold on. They're not going to do that. Go ahead. Hold up. Go ahead, Diva. And Rick, you're next.
I was just saying, South Carolina's solution, you're going to have a problem because the United States Constitution. You can't. It's somebody's choice and they're right if they want to finish high school. Whether that's a good thing or not, that's debatable. But you cannot sit up here and say, well, we need to do this, we need to do that, when you're going to try to work outside of the bounds of the Constitution. And then you have so many people who say, yeah, that's a good idea, but yeah, on the other hand, oh, somebody wants to take away our constitutional rights, but yet you're okay with taking away a constitutional right to somebody else because you feel like they're not productive in society.
Hey, Tracy, could I hit them with a body blow before the break?
Uh-oh.
About the black man and so forth? Farrakhan says, you keep yours and I'll keep mine, when he's talking about interracial relationships. Let me tell you something. I blame the black man for not treating the black woman with the respect where she's not going to try to emasculate or
you're
throw
wrong.
Them out. You know,
you're wrong.
They want to have babies and they want to leave.
Look,
baby mama, baby mama, baby mama. That is a losing strategy. Baby mama doesn't work.
Hold on. Mark, you're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. The white society created the baby mama drama because only a father can teach a boy how to become a man. And when you emasculate the man to where he no longer has any control over his children, then he doesn't know, because he's raised by his mama, how to become that man. So right now we think of having notches in our belt, and sex is love. And so girls lay down without any consequences, and boys allow it. And every man will lay down anywhere if a woman will allow it. Because you see the same thing sprinkling over into the white community.
That's true.
So you can't. So when we talk about, hold on, Diva. So when you talk about the emasculation of the black male, it's deeper than just the baby mama. Because the reason why we have the baby mama is because we've emasculated the black man to where he's feminized and he doesn't know what it does to be a man. And if you want to know the truth about it, they're doing the same thing to the white male.
And let me say this before the break. You brought up a great point. If the black male is getting hit on the chin by society, why does he go home and the black female gives it to him again? I don't understand that. Why are they doing
this? Segments like this doesn't happen in all racial groups. These types of things where you have the message.
Because white society has set up the hierarchy for it.
I just don't understand
why. That great society?
Johnson.
That great society set up the hierarchy for it. Because
well,
remember,
hey,
all we wanted was a system. And what they gave us was, have a baby and we'll pay you. Go ahead, South Carolina.
What's crazy, and what reality is, for the past 30 years, I've seen it on TV, there's been a concerted effort to do the same exact thing to the white male. You look at the shows like Father Knows Best and so on and so forth. Well, in the 70s, that changed to make the white male look like an idiot. You look at how many fathers on TV outside of John Walton that were stand-up, straightforward, 100% men. Now you got idiots, and they make the dad look like a fool.
They're turning men into
shows
the
like
fool.
Nickelodeon and so on and so forth.
Is that feminism?
Yeah. It's
yes,
the feminization of America.
In Hollywood, spreading the feminism from the 70s and on.
What is it? It's the homosexual agenda.
Well, That's another subject. You know,
no, you got to understand. Remember, the homosexual agenda.
They drive Hollywood.
Which drives perception of what you see.
There's no doubt.
And so when you see, you don't see strong black men. You see metrosexuals everywhere who have no control over their whole family. So that which they've done to the black male, it's coming to a house near you.
And let me say another controversial thing. There is a high, proportionately, there are many black males that are homosexual that are in the closet, and the black community won't come to grips with that. There's a high incident of that.
Actually,
AIDS support center.
Actually, no, what happens is, you got to get your facts right. What happens is we go to prison. Black males go to prison. While they're in prison, they don't consider themselves homosexuals. They just consider themselves friends with benefits or whatever they may call them. They come back home to their women after contracting the HIV virus.
Yeah, you
so
have
they're heterosexual
HIV
outside the
prison
and homosexual inside the prison, but they're
not
on the down low.
The highest rates of HIV transmission are among black females who are straight, who are not gay, but they were able to contract the virus from their husband or boyfriend who was locked up, and he was exposed to the virus in prison. So that's
so
why the HIV rate is so high.
Quit selling the drugs and you won't go to jail.
But you won't give me a job. We got to keep up. Remember, it's a perpetual cycle. And this perpetual cycle, and until you give people opportunity so that they can go get meaningful work, and we know statistically that African American owners are more likely to hire African Americans and give them opportunity than their counterparts of white America.
I agree, but look at in Youngstown, we have oil and gas now. Why can't this be a start for black unemployed and you know the high risk ages?
You gotta get opportunity.
Yeah.
Well, go get the truck driver. Go get the commercial license and go apply.
I'll be right back.
Well, sir, you know, things in life are not that simple or easy. You have a lot of people who don't have the social access to those opportunities because you have to know the right person to get that job. That's how it works today. Most jobs are gotten by word of mouth. It's not by somebody who's able to get something from a newspaper or from a bulletin board or whatever. It's by word of mouth how people get opportunities. So a lot of people don't have the social access to those opportunities.
Hey, Philadelphia? Right
yeah,
now,
what,
there are probably hundreds of jobs for individuals that know how to weld. If you have your welding credentials, you can go to South Dakota right now and get a job making $23 an hour.
What black person want to live in South Dakota?
There you go.
Well,
I knew somebody was going to say that.
If you don't want to work, and make sure that black young men who are 17 or 18 years old get the skills of welding so that they're able to take those positions.
You go to school, man. You go to school and get the welding. You can get that.
You get that
at a trade school.
Well, but look, then what you should do as an individual is make sure that young black men in high school know about those opportunities.
But why does a black male have to move to South Dakota to get a job opportunity when a job opportunity is available in the community?
Because,
But the people in that community won't hire him. Why? Because of his skin color.
No, I've tried this one, Diva. He made a comment about them not being able to pass the PIP test.
But sir, to make a blanket statement that it's just black men who cannot pass the PIP test,
He did not say it was just black men that can't pass the PIP test. He said that there was a high incidence of black people not being able to pass the urinalysis. He didn't say it was just black people.
Well, then he needs to give me a detailed breakdown based upon race as to who cannot pass that test. Otherwise, he's making a generalized statement based upon a population of people that he knows in that particular state. And that's what's been happening on this program. You're making these general statements about a whole race of people.
Philadelphia?
Which is completely not accurate across the board. Philadelphia.
And if you want to look at the genesis of the problem, you have to look at it on a deeper level.
Are you in business? Are you in business?
You two have to
do you own a business?
With each other.
Diva, Philadelphia, are you in business?
Sir, whether I'm in business or not.
Just answer my question, man.
You two need to stop arguing with each other because you're not giving anybody a chance.
Personally, I have been involved in businesses in the past, and I do know how business operates.
Okay, you know how business operates. If you have a rule that states you have to pass your analysis in order to get hired, and you can't pass your analysis, is it your fault or is it the business's fault?
Anyone knows you have to meet the standards of conduct that someone who is an employer wants you to meet. But
to make
a generalized statement that it's just black men who cannot pass this particular test is not accurate.
You heard one thing that he said, and that was black men can't pass the test. You just assumed he said that all black men can't pass the test. He said there was a high incidence.
And clarify. He did not clarify.
He did not clarify what he was saying.
Never mind. You're deflecting again. That's
no, I'm not trying to deflect. You know,
if somebody's going to get on a
radio program, make sure your statements are accurate. Have some information to back it up with. Otherwise, the person is just making biased statements on the radio.
I think he did say go to the Department of Labor Statistics. That's where he said go and check it out.
Well, then what he needs to do is he needs to give me a website address. He needs to give me some kind of citation as to what numbers he's looking at. Otherwise, he's just making biased statements on the radio. Generalized biased statements based upon a small narrow group of people who he particularly knows personally.
Listen, there's a steel mill here. There's a steel mill here in town. Okay, they don't hire individuals off the street. You have to get on at the steel mill through the temp agency over in a different town. I know plenty of guys that go over there, both black and white, that cannot pass your analysis. However, am I concerned about the white ones that can't pass a test?
Yeah. No, I'm not saying, well, look, if you're concerned about people as a Christian, I would assume that you would be concerned about everybody.
Because here's the thing. You just went someplace. You just deflected again, man. Come on. Look,
what I'm saying to you is you can't make, you know, individual cases and examples that you know and apply it across the board. That's not accurate thinking to do things like that.
I can apply it in reverse. Because out of all the black and white males I know that outside of my family members, it's the white males who are smoking the weed and the black men who are hard workers and who just basically are trying to put every foot forward and live day to day. And it's all of my white friends that are smoking weed. So I can make a generalized statement and say that in order for the white community to get to better themselves here in Columbus, Ohio, would be for them to stop smoking weed, because that's all I see is the white men smoking weed. But then if I would have made that statement, you would have attacked me and said I was being disingenuous, South Carolina.
No, I wouldn't.
Because I know
a bunch of white boys that smoke weed, and I know a bunch of black boys that smoke weed.
But we are not talking about white people right now.
That's what I'm saying.
But do you see how difficult it is for a white man to come to black people and tell us what the problem is with our community and how to fix it? That's just like me as a woman telling you as a man what your problem is and how you need to fix yourself as a man.
Listen, the only thing the mayor said was from his perspective. This is, Diva, if somebody tells you, if just like you as a woman tell me as a man,
say this,
I don't like the way you talk to me.
I keep saying Martin Luther King. King envisioned a group. The next thing he was going to do before they killed him was have a poor people's march.
That's why they killed him.
Right, absolutely. Now, but here's the thing. Why do I keep saying Martin Luther King, and I have no other names to refer to?
Because you did. Because they didn't let you know this. Remember, society still makes you think that there was only the one, but there's Medgar Evers, and there was Malcolm X.
No more. Know how that would happen.
But
today,
They only let you know. That's just like we only think Martin Luther King had one speech, and it was called I Have a Dream, but they don't talk about the Birmingham letters. There's a lot of things that
they won't educate that. I mean, I know all the speeches because I learned them.
That's because you read them.
Yeah.
But they don't put those on Front Street. And we're going to have to realize that society at large has caused us to be where we are, how we are. And we need to reshape it because as I fight with Philadelphia about, and some things I totally agree, I just hate when he filibusters.
Well,
but the perception of America
good.
Has become a lot of our reality, and it's not real. It's only a mirage.
Well, and I could identify with that. And let me just digress. We'll go back to the phones if you want. Think of the irony of a black president is going to sign an immigration bill that's going to have Hispanics coming and taking over and really
become competitive.
The black person, I'm telling you.
He's in trouble.
Big trouble.
Hold on, guys. Local call. Your mic is on. Hold on, Diva. Local call. Your mic is on.
Check it. Let me make one point to this guy because he's quoted a lot of facts about black people. So let me tell you what the black mindset is. If you want to change the world, start with yourself.
I agree.
You ask me what I'm going to do or what we're going to do. What you going to do? Let's say you own an asphalt company. I come ask you for a job. You say you ain't got none.
Well,
that white dude that you went to school with, his grandson graduated Saturday. Mm-hmm. You'll give him a job, $18, hold a flag. You'll make him a job because that's your boy.
But without getting into all that, I have done what you're suggesting.
Give us some opportunity.
I have, believe it or not.
Well, okay, that's you, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, more people need to. I agree.
Everybody
but if you're going to wait around and think white America is going to rescue you, you're low on the agenda.
My whole family got more degrees than a thermometer.
Mm-hmm.
That's because all my uncles and grandfathers worked in these mills. Y'all set the mills down.
And that's what happened.
Yep.
And one last thing. I think in Washington they ought to have a monument to the black grandmother who raised generations. I mean, I think... You know, that's the flip side of the emasculate. I mean, you know, who stepped up and did that. It's all messed up. You got to start over.
Hey, guys, let me jump into here real quick because I got to pick up some more calls before the end of the day. But I want you guys to realize Marky Mark has taken the devil's advocacy on this role. But let me say this. I got to say this about him before he walks out of here. Some of the views and the opinions that he has expressed today has not been of his own, but it has been of those that he has been around, because Marky Mark's been around quite a few.
If you want to find our leader, put the leader back in the household, the daddy. Give the daddy a job so he can take care of himself.
That's what I said.
Thank you, Tracy.
They love you. 360, your mic is on.
I can't leave you for 5 minutes, can I?
No.
Before you just let it disintegrate.
No.
Hey, Jeff, she blamed you.
I got to blame her. It's Tracy's fault. Now, this is a great conversation. Mark, you guys need to know Mark. Mark's a great guy and would not be the kind of person that would do those dastardly things that we see other people do to people. He is definitely one of those good guys. But he was right on a number of things, especially the emasculation of the black man. And then you guys shared it further into the emasculation of the black of the white man. They're getting rid of men because this is a spiritual problem. It's a spiritual thing, and it's done by people that hate the idea of God, period. And that's where they're going with it. But, you know, very good show. I just had to call in because I still heard, you know, listening in.
Now, listen, hey, you're supposed to be far enough away that you ain't even paying me listening in.
My man, Jeff.
Jeff called me up talking about, I got to go pick up my baby girl and I'm going to spend some time with my wife. And if you are still close enough to listen to me, that means you are in the still in the yo.
You know, I'm listening on my phone, girl. But listen. You bring your girl, who is my wife, your friend, my wife.
It's not. I can't be her. I know it's you, Jeff. I know it's you. Don't worry about it. I got your wife back.
You bring me. That's okay. Bye. Love you all. Have a good weekend.
Love you too, brother.
Love you too.
And
be careful out there, Jeff. Hey, the number again. I want to thank everybody. The number is 347-945-5229. And this is something that we need to take ownership of.
No doubt. Everybody.
We need to, because it is an American institutional problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the racism of America that is standing up today is right now destroying America from the inside out. You have more people who are not producing because of racism.
And you know what? You make a great point. But let me just say this. As a young man, it was pointed out to me, you don't realize the contributions that black Americans have made to this country. And largely, it's purposefully, they don't want to say. We have a great fabric to lose a black citizen because he's given up. You know, what great poem, what great cure for an illness that could be done, but they have given up.
But this is more than cures and illnesses. This is every time you take a child and you abort it, that child
right.
no longer grows up and puts into the Social Security system.
True.
Every time you take a man and you put a man or woman and incarcerate them, that is someone who is raping the resources of the system and not putting back into the system. America is designed for perpetuity and for growth so that the next generation actually deposits into the next generation.
And they don't want that for the blacks.
They don't want it for the blacks, but now it's more than it's not about black anymore. They've already taken care of the black problem. So they're already on their own disintegrate if they stay on the same course. So they no longer have to be concerned about the disintegration as long as they can control it. And you see that when they mobilize the African-American community for voting. They move
Absolutely.
You for voting.
Mm-hmm.
They move you for sensationalism, but they don't move you for the advancement of your community. And we need to see that. That's just honest and true.
Amen.
And until we actually begin to motivate ourselves and to mobilize ourselves for our own advancement and understand what the problems are and understand that when we're being used and that they can't use me unless I allow you to lose me. Going back to my analogy of the prostitute, the girlfriend, and the wife.
And young people, young black people, young white, you got to listen to that message. I tell them, let me just give a shout out to my son, Mark, great ball player and so forth. I preach that to him every day. No one's going to, you got to get off the couch and do it. But, you know, getting just real quick, you have a lot of opinions out there. Tell me, if anyone out there, what ideas, and, you know, we're having a discussion here, what are you going to do? What are you going to do about getting off the couch? What is black America going to do about getting back in the game?
It's not about black America.
Is it over?
It's not about black America. It's about America. This is not a black problem. This is an American problem, and until white America understands this is not a black American problem, this is an American problem, and as long as we allow black America to erode, it's coming to a home near you.
Well, we all hang.
History shows you that.
We all hang together or all hang separately.
Local call, your mic is on.
Oh, yeah. Is that Mark Wahlberg from television?
Yes. No. No, I wish. I wish. He used my moniker.
Okay, well, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We need to understand that. If the prostitute is the only one that wins, because you're going to pay her either way. She knows you're married. She knows you have a girlfriend, and she's going to get paid up front. She understands every time she's used, she knows she's being used, and she gets what she wants. The girlfriend gets what she can take. And the wife thinks she has it all and has nothing. And America, and we need to wake up with that. And we need to understand that we need to get it just like Israel gets theirs, China gets theirs, France gets theirs, Germany gets theirs, Korea gets theirs.
I agree.
They don't even vote and they get theirs.
And they get theirs. Everybody, but. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Diva.
I would have to say the one thing that I would have to agree with Mark on is the way that black men treat women. They're women. When it comes to abortion and when it comes to the baby daddy syndrome, I'm not talking about the husbands and the good men who are looking to uphold a woman the way that she's supposed to. When you have, when you go to an abortion clinic and you see those young women sitting there in the abortion clinic, right or wrong, how they got themselves in that position, they're there because majority of the time because that black man has coerced them into that clinic by walking away.
But Diva.
Hold on. It's not for me as a black woman to tell you how to do right as a black man.
But Diva. Right. But Diva, it is the black. Listen, it is the black woman who raised that black boy.
Yeah.
It is the black woman who raised that black boy who has given him the opportunity to go out and think that abortion is an option.
Also,
because
Philadelphia. Diva.
Listen what I'm saying. See, when a black boy sees his mother's bedroom as a revolving door with her uncles and boyfriends, when a black boy sees his father emasculated by his mother, it actually puts a stamp on him on how he treats his black women.
Mm.
And we need to take onus in that. Go ahead, Philadelphia.
But also, you know, the abortion is not always encouraged directly by the black man. The social workers in major urban-type cities, they play a significant role in the decision of the black female to go forward and have the abortion. Because what happens is the social worker will come to the black female's home, and a lot of cases the black male isn't even there. And she will tell them, look, the state will not give you any more benefits if you have another baby. So therefore, she makes a financial decision to go down to Planned Parenthood and to abort that baby.
No. See, if
that's what happens in a lot of cases, ma'am. That's what happens in a lot of cases.
If you put it in my if you put it in my mind that I will never abort my child by the foundation that if I was raised in the home in which I came up in, it will never become an upside because I will never have allow an outside influence to influence my core.
It's a non-starter.
That is not true. I know plenty of black men. I know plenty of men who their parents would not have not taught them.
Diva, I didn't say that. Diva, I didn't say that. I didn't say that they were not taught it. I'm talking about the core of the family. That's a whole other issue, a whole other day that we don't have time for. Go ahead, 518.
The human dilemma has created this issue where we all cannot agree and we all feel like we have a solution. Unfortunately, there is not one person on this phone that can answer every man's question that has an issue.
But yes, there is. Try to philosophize that. Yes, there is hope.
And the hope is that if we can just find a way to, with one accord, agree to disagree and find a solution for each individual problem, we'll be all right.
But we already have a solution.
I don't know what we do, Trey.
Yes, we do. The question is, will you do the solution? You're doing the solution. I know you.
When in doubt, do the right thing.
That is the solution right there. I know you. I know. Those that I do know, those are solutions. So the question is, when are we talk about this all the time. The solution's already being in being out there. We just need to go out and create more solutions because we already know what to do. The question is, will we do it?
We got to teach properly, Trey.
Hey, that's what I'm saying. It starts with me, because I can't make you do it. Go ahead, Chicago.
Well, like you said, it's about doing the right thing. And what white society says, they are the majority here in America. They
not for long.
They can use their bully pulpit. There are these lawmakers to change these laws so black males wouldn't be in a predicament that they are in, incarcerated 33%.
Guess what? I don't need to change the law. All I need to do is go start a business and hire you. I know that you got a record. I know you smoke reefer. And when you come to work, demand it that you get, you know, you got a three strikes, you're out program. That I'm going to give you opportunity.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to give you encouragement.
Good luck, Trey.
No. No. See, it begins with me.
It's a white society.
I can't wait on the white man to give me affirmation.
The solution
exactly.
I presented earlier works. That will
listen,
cut down on the situation that's going on.
The solution you gave ain't going to work because we're not politically savvy enough. But Barack Obama, he don't care if every black man in America drops dead. We need to understand that. He's never coming to save us. He didn't go in there to save you, and all he did was use us. Remember, we were the girlfriend in that. We hoped that we were going to get a kiss, and he gave us no kiss. Bent us over and said, thank you very much, and walked out the door. He's just like Mike Tyson and the girl that they say he raped that he didn't. He never walked into the car.
I just find
so we need to be honest about that. President Obama is never coming to save you. He's never going to do anything for you, and you don't even know what to ask. He don't even like you. He just used you, and he got what he wanted.
We're looking for a savior.
There's never coming. You have to save yourself.
Well, Patricia, that's selfish. That's selfish. And we're supposed to be selfless.
Again, you better find Jesus. Because that's the only one that's going to come and help you. Because hey, there's nobody coming to help you. You've got to save yourself. And we need to quit trying to find a Savior in someone else. It starts with us.
It does. You first save yourself, then go to the next guy, then start organizing, and pick your leaders carefully.
Well, you're talking about individual now. You're not talking about
yeah,
having
anybody now.
There ain't no leader. I'm done.
Yeah, I hear you.
Hey, guys. You guys on Monday. So Monday's open mic will be back here. All of us will be here. Hopefully I'll be able to control Ben because you know he's absolutely out of his mind.
He's out of control.
Look, you're on a hamster wheel.
7945-5229. We'll see you guys back here on Monday. God bless and have a wonderful weekend.
One, two, yeah. What is good for? Absolutely
nothing.
Afternoons with Tracy and Friends. Listen to Tracy every weekday from noon to 3 on Newstalk 600. Visit our website for more about Tracy and Friends at www.tracyandfriends.com. That's T-R-A-C-E-Y and friends.com. Tune in tomorrow at noon for the next edition of Afternoons with Tracy and Friends on Newstalk 600 WSOM.
WSOM, Salem, Youngstown, Warren. The home for Afternoons with Tracy and Friends. News Talk 600 WSOM.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. When you hear from the Internal Revenue Service, it's usually not an apology. This time, it was different. Here's ABC's Vic Ratner.
After Tea Party and conservative groups complained that they were being targeted by the Internal Revenue Service during the 2012 campaign, now an apology from Lois Lerner of the IRS.
We made some mistakes. Some people
didn't use good judgment.
Lois Lerner says there was never any political motive, that the IRS was routinely investigating thousands of new applications for social welfare groups that were seeking tax-exempt status. Vic Ratner, ABC News, Washington.
The Texas Rangers, the elite force of criminal investigators, is joining the probe into last month's deadly explosion at a fertilizer plant in the tiny town of West.
The two developments have happened almost simultaneously, although there's no direct connection that investigators are willing to discuss. 31-year-old West volunteer paramedic Bryce Reed is in custody, charged with